The Place to Be podcast is a proud member of the History of WWE.com website. The History of WWE.com features thousands of complete cards and detailed results from throughout wrestling history from legendary promotions across the country, in addition to informative columns and reviews. It is also the official home of the Place to Be podcast and Scott and Justin's pay-per-view reviews. So visit us at thehistoryofwwe.com or on Facebook by searching for History of WWE or the Place to Be podcast, because for anything and everything wrestling, the History of WWE.com is always the place to be.
Yeah, Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's what do you call it, Kramer?
The billiard room.
No.
The name.
The billiard?
Not the billiards.
It was...
Come on, already.
What?
Come on. We call it the place to be.
The place to be, yes, it's the place to be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can.
Time to play the game.
Well, you always left me satisfied and smiling, so.
That's what she said.
Why do I want this?
Yeah.
Because I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, it is now time for the Place to Be podcast. And now your hosts, Justin Rosero and Scott Friscolo.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to another great episode of the Place to Be podcast. I am your co-host, Justin Rosero, and we are wrapping up this action-packed week with another trip through the Vintage Vault, and joining me, as always, is the man who was never this nor that, and that is Scott Criscolo. Scott, how you doing?
I guess that's good to be either this or that, and right down the middle. JR, always a pleasure, sir. Welcome, everyone, to episode 91. We're almost there, man. We're literally, like, a few miles from the exit of the big C-note. Hope everyone is getting their Christmas shopping done. We're getting down the wire here. If you're listening right after it's been posted, you're just under a week away from Christmas and Hanukkah. Hanukkah starts Wednesday for all of our Jewish listeners. I don't know when Kwanzaa is. I think it's usually after Christmas. But it is our third podcast this week. We don't do that very often.
No, rare.
You don't have to go the extra. Very rare. But it was a very busy week in all aspects. And we love that. The busier, the better for us, I say. And tonight, as my PIC has indicated, it is Vintage Vault week, V-squared. Last one for a little bit. We're going to take a little breather for the holidays. Everybody,
I don't do any tricks.
You know, you might be asked to if you don't bring anything to the Christmas party, all right? And don't bring the trampoline. Nobody wants to see you jump in the snow.
Maybe he'll bring the Christmas cookies.
Maybe he'll bring the Christmas. No, you know who's in charge of the Christmas cookies.
How about the banana man?
Severin.
The banana man?
Yeah, the banana man. No. Yeah, the banana man, yes. this will be the last vault, maybe for a week, maybe a little long, depends, but I hope you enjoy this one, and then you'll enjoy your holidays, and we'll be back raring to go. Because tonight, we have a very interesting show. I wouldn't say JR and I are divisive, but opinions will vary. And it's not just a main event for the show. It is a giant main event.
Sports entertainment now continues with the tradition of WrestleMania. WrestleMania 1. WrestleMania 2. WrestleMania 3. WrestleMania 4. WrestleMania 5. WrestleMania 6. WrestleMania 7. WrestleMania 8. WrestleMania 9. WrestleMania 10. And now, WrestleMania 11, this year starring Baywatch's Pamela Anderson, Home Improvement's Jonathan Taylor Thomas, MTV's Jennifer McCarthy, NYPD Blue's Nicholas Torturo, with special musical guests Salt and Peppa, and featuring Lawrence Taylor's All-Pro Team.
No, I was hoping Vince would talk at some point there, but I guess he didn't feel like it.
Jesus. is he there?
Well, I think the fitting thing, and it kind of sets the tone for this WrestleMania, is that open when they were reading all the numbers and everything was like, they were just showing highlights of all the different celebrities throughout the years. And of course, then they focus on the celebrities here, because that's really what this WrestleMania was all about, was the celebrity participation. They know, and we'll talk about this all throughout the card, they know they had a weak roster. They know they had a weak set of talent, and that the card needed to be carried mainly by the group of celebrities they brought in for the show.
Yes, exactly. Of course, this week on V-Squared, the Vintage Vault brings you WrestleMania 11. And this was a show that I'm actually looking forward to, because this is one where you and I differ a lot. Not a lot, but I will say that I've softened my stance on this show than I did when we first met and first started doing the reviews. I'm looking forward to seeing what our PTB Nation thinks later on in the show and our feedback. But April 2nd, 1995, live from the Hartford Civic Center. That is indeed, yes, my satellite office in Hartford, Connecticut. Although I did not go to this show, but I know people who did. Your announcers, he's there. May not have heard him, but he was there. Vincent Kennedy McMahon, and of course, Jerry the King Lawler. 15,000 the audience, which is not a sellout. I don't know if does Graham call it a sellout? I don't know.
Let me see. I got it for you here. Hang on. The XL Center, of course, is called, yep. Holds. Yep. For concert, 16,606. Hockey, 15,635. Basketball, 16,294.
And it says, well, he says 15,000 sellout, which doesn't surprise me. I mean, we are in the Northeast, so regardless of what the show looked like on paper, you're in the right part of the country to try and fill the seat. So.
Plus, for the second year in a row, they had the fan festival and all that stuff. So.
Right. Yeah, so, I mean, it's not a surprise that the place is packed, because it is in the wheelhouse and it's in the home state. So,
and of course, it opened the Hartford Civic Center, now known as the XL Center, opened in 1975. They broke ground in 1971. Yep. The city of Hartford owns it. Operator is the Anschultz Entertainment Group. Mm-hmm. Architect was Frioli Blum Yesselman. And
yes.
Project manager was Gilbane Building Company. So there you
yes.
go.
Yes. And, of course, for those that live in the state, I don't know if you knew this, but the Civic Center had a terrible accident in 19...
Roof collapse, 1978 to 80. It was closed.
Yes, it was closed, 1978. Fortunately, a Whaler game had just ended. So fortunately, no one was in there. But a massive blizzard here in the Northeast hit the Northeast, and a snow caved in the roof of the Civic Center. But again, there was no one there. There was no one in the building, thank God. And they were closed for 2 years, and they reopened in 1980. It actually looked a lot better. So the Whalers, who at the time were the New England Whalers, and they were in the WHA, they didn't become the Hartford Whalers till 1980, and that's when they joined them.
Yep, and then they moved off in 97. It's currently the home of the Connecticut Whale, the AHL, and the Yukon Huskies, of course.
Yes, Connecticut Whale is the AHL affiliate of the Rangers, actually. So, okay, buy rate 1.3, and you heard most of the celebrities, and we'll get to the football players when we get to that match. But you heard most of the celebrities right there, including Salt and Pepper, who I was actually a very big fan of. I liked Salt and Pepper. Spinderella. Turn it up one time.
Salt, there was a battery. That fallacious plebeian of your society. He has a constant tendency to relapse into barbarianism. And he proved it. The way he stole my belt. Yes, my belt. It was one of the biggest travesties that ever occurred. Matter of fact, it superseded any crime in this century. And I'm here to confront the judicial system because of the amoral attitude that they project to your society. Are you listening to me?
He just doesn't quit, does he?
Not my problem anymore. I'm out of here.
You're not just going to leave him here.
Hey, I got a plane to catch. I'm off to WrestleMania.
He felt he was kabooved.
Yes, he was kabooved.
He was kabooved. Did he go visit, what is it, Judge Boss? Judge Roy? Or Judge Ray Traylor? Whatever it was.
Well, he didn't have his sunglasses on, so he could not
No,
hear.
He didn't. Yes, of course. And he did not want to have his partner for the Survivor Series. All right. That is, of course, former World Wrestling Federation champion, Mr. Bob Backlund. And, of course, he is involved in a big match on this show in a little bit. I'm actually, again, I really am looking forward to this one because, of course, you can follow along with us on our outstanding message board, bigelow34.proboards.com. Follow along with our written review. And you'll see that the opinions kind of go back and forth. It's a very unique show. A lot of people, including myself, when I remember it, thought the show was absolutely hideous. But I've softened on it a little bit, and a lot of people think, obviously, that there's worse ones in this. But
I think it has its moments. To me, though, and we talked about this with WrestleMania 9, my argument isn't that it's a great show. My argument is that they didn't really have much to work with at this point, so they kind of did the best they could. My beef with 9 was I thought they had a better roster and that there was a lot more they could have done with that card. This card, I feel like they had. Everyone they had was in the mix, and there weren't too many beefs I had with it overall. It's just this was just what they were working with at this point, unfortunately.
Yeah, so we don't have a dark match. And for those that always wanted to know, I'm going to give you a name, JR, and why don't you tell me who you think this is. Kathy Huey.
One of Mick Foley's kids?
No. No, Kathy Huey was the wonderful girl, the Special Olympian.
Oh, yes, that's right.
Who actually sang the national anthem. Because obviously, 1995, the Special Olympics World Games were here in Connecticut. They actually were being done in New Haven, right in my backyard. I actually went to – I covered some of the events for my college radio station that spring. So she sang the national anthem. No one ever remembers what her name was, but it was Kathy Huey.
And actually, she wasn't supposed to. She wasn't announced ahead of time. It was the group – I don't really remember them that well. I think they were called like Fishbone, I believe was the band. And they were plugged ahead of time, I remember. And all of a sudden they had this. I know that it was probably May Connecticut pulled some strings at the Special Olympics and Vince was trying to still get in the good graces after the steroid trial. So he probably switched things up. But that was actually a last minute change.
Yes. Fishbone is a band. A very good one, actually, too. But they got moved. And Kathy Huey, who was, again, a Special Olympian. I don't remember her event, but... She sang the national anthem. But, yeah, the Special Olympics World Games took place right in New Haven in 1995. So,
what was Matt Rotella's event in that year?
I believe he was doing archery. Okay. But he problem was because of the hunch, he shot a deer and got thrown off the premises. So, all right, let's get down to business. There was no dark match. So, sorry, Brooklyn Brawler doesn't get a paycheck for this one.
Damn it.
Is he even still with the company? I'm sure he's still with the company.
Oh, yeah,
was he still doing matches at this point, I guess?
I'm sure he was on TV, yeah. I think so.
All right, let's get down to business. Match number one. I already have an issue with this because I absolutely hate this match. The Blue Brothers, who we've talked about already, although they make their – we talked about them, right? But they make their actual debut here, don't they? I believe they do. We have a fun fact.
No, they were at the Rumble.
Yeah, so we have their official fun fact here.
Okay, well, we already did that. We already read through all that.
So the Blue Brothers take on this newly put together tag team of the British Bulldog and Lex Luger, and they go by the name the Allied Powers. And now you can officially tell this is the official time when they've officially checked Lex Luger out as any type of credible anything.
So? Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
I mean, Bulldog was still pretty high on the radar.
Weird team.
I always liked it. I thought it was a pretty cool mashup of the two teams.
I thought it was kind of cheap. Well, no, I've never said anything bad about Bulldog. Bulldog is just Bulldog. He's awesome. But for Luger, this is a, you know...
They hadn't really teamed before this yet.
Yeah.
This was like kind of their first thing, and then they ended up keeping them together. So, I don't know. I guess maybe because I'm a product of the time period, it never really bothered me. I mean, Bulldog wasn't really doing too much at the time anyway, and this gave Luger something to do. And I honestly thought they were fast-tracking them to be like the main team and to win the titles, and it looked that way for the summer. So even though they work as a team, they are pushed pretty well throughout 95 up until about July when things kind of fall apart. But, I'd say Luger becomes an afterthought as a singles guy, but I don't think he was being buried in any manner. I think they used the Allied Powers well on TV, I thought.
Well, I agree with you in that aspect, but Excuse me. But the point is that he wasn't brought in here to be a tag guy. He was brought in here 2 years earlier to be like this big, stunning, awesome heel. They screwed themselves with Luger, I have to say. And much as Luger is not one of my favorite people, and you know, his work rate in the ring leaves quite a bit to be desired. If they had just kept him, I mean, we'll get more into this towards later on in the calendar year when he's finally out the door. But I always felt that they should have just kept the guy a heel and just kept him going, made him a good opponent for Brett down the line, and facing him and maybe Yoko together as this great team. Maybe Luger could have been with Cornette. Instead, we won't go over it again because we did it at our WrestleMania 9 vault, but they screwed the whole thing up and did everything and turned him face, and the whole thing was a fucking disaster. So they have no one to blame with them. In my opinion, as much as Luger is kind of a hump, they really have no one to blame but themselves in this whole thing. They screwed up with him, and now they're going to make the guy pay. But
I don't know. I disagree a little bit. I don't know how much they really screwed up as much as he just didn't click with the fans. I'm like, they gave him all the pushes. I mean, I guess you could have said, yeah, they should have given him the title at SummerSlam, but I got the thinking there that they thought they could continue that chase through Mania. It's just that the fans were more into Bret Hart at that point, and they listened to the fans. They put the title on Bret, and Luger kind of foundered from there, but I don't think they fucked him up in any way. I mean, I guess if you're saying he should have stayed heel, that would be the thing, but
yeah,
for that stretch in 93, he was pretty damn over as the main guy, like in the summer and stuff. So I think if they gave him the title of SummerSlam, he would have maybe had a successful reign for a little while. But
I don't know. I mean, I always thought that he was really over as a great heel, and he was a guy that, you know, he was acting like himself, a pompous, self-absorbed prick. And then they tried to make him this happy-go-lucky guy, and he comes out with his little, you know, on the Intrepid with his little, you know, rugby shirt with a flag.
His body slammers around the world won everybody's vote. It almost knocked the hole right through the bottom of the boat.
Well, in all honesty, it would have been better if he slammed Yoko on the fucking Intrepid. It probably would have been better. But I don't know. I just, this whole opener is just bad, and I don't know. I hated the whole thing. I don't know. I didn't like it.
We're going to have a lot of disagreements. I mean, the match itself, yeah, it's not tremendous, but whatever. I don't know. I just have a weird, I'm going to apologize up front, I guess. I'm probably going to get a lot of hate on the boards, but I just have a weird enjoyment of the show. Like I said, I think it's because it was during the time that I was just really into the product. Yeah, I just happened to be that age. I was, you know, 14. I was really into things, and this was the first WrestleMania I ordered at my house. So we were, I don't know. I was pretty into things, regardless of the quality at the time. You know, at the time, I didn't know much better. I had just started watching really heavily in late 90, so you know, 92 was great product wise, but I can't say like I never really seen like you know, red hot NWA in ring. I just didn't grow up in that time period, so to me this was still fun to watch. So
right, no, it's understandable. And again, I'm not going to
killing
say...
my past, you fucking murderer.
I'm just saying that I'm just talking about this match. I do, I mean, we've known each other a long time, and you remember when we first did the reviews for this, I creamed this show. I'm not going to do that. It is going to get better for, in my opinion, as we move along. I just hate.
What kind of disgusting, despicable lack of respect is that Billy What's His Name show?
Yeah, you're making a great case for yourself by playing that. But anyway,
Allied Power. Match for the total package, Lex Luger and Super Brawl. Super Saturday? What is it? I don't even know what it's called. What is it called?
Super Brawl Saturday.
Super Brawl Saturday? Can you afford to pay me to wrestle around? I don't know. I'm one of the biggest legends and stars ever in this. God! And your t-shirts are too tight too, Billy! And you book a match with me against Ryan Killings! Look at me! I'm a total package! I will rip him apart! I'm pissed now!
I'd be pissed too after that opener with the Blue Brothers, so. All right. So the Allied Powers do win, and they do, and you know, starts a push, and you know, maybe the team as an entity probably looked pretty good for a few months. And I'm not knocking Bulldog, because you know, you can put Bulldog in anything. He's always been one of the best mid card guys. All I'm saying is everyone thinks that at this point Luger was dead in the water.
As a main event player he was, but right. I still think he was useful in this role as kind of a guy that went down to help the mid card out. And I thought it was fine putting the Blue Brothers in here. Obviously, it didn't lead to a great match in ring, but They were kind of an antiseptic heel team, so it's like the crowd was going to turn on Luger and Bulldog, and it was a good like squash. They could have, you know, the Blues didn't really matter at this point, so they could lose cleanly, quickly, and it didn't matter. It was just a way to kind of establish Luger and Bulldog as a team and give them a win. So,
right, but I'm not disagreeing with you in the sense that this was what they did with Luger, and it was being effective. My point is I'm sure they didn't pay him to help the mid-card out. I mean, they paid him to be a stud main event guy.
Yeah, but they did. Well, they did that, though, for like 2 years at this point. So
yeah, and it bombed. So he could have, I mean, he hadn't even
It bombed anything. After the first year. The first year he was there wasn't that bad. I thought he had a pretty good 93 and half a 94. It's just after WrestleMania 10 is when things fell apart.
Right.
You know, and they had to do something with him. Well, they're gonna, I mean, I don't know. What are they going to do with him at this point? Yeah, it bombed afterwards, but I still think that he started well. It's just that Bret Hart was so over. And and Randy Savage as well, that Luger just didn't look as over. They probably should have turned him heel, and it sounds like that was maybe the plan as the year was going along, but obviously we'll see things change. So, look, I'm not saying he set the world on fire, but I think we look back unfairly on his run.
Well, I mean, I just think that with all the hoopla that he had coming in, my whole thing about turning him face, and we're not going to get into the whole 93 thing again. I understand that he got the main event, he had a decent push, the whole bus thing was working. After blowing it at SummerSlam that year, I think the window was shorter than you do, but that's neither here nor there. In any case, the Allied Powers win the match here in the opener. They beat the Blue Brothers.
The only thing I'll say is they probably could have done Luger Tatanka here, because that had their blow off on the February Raw. I think it was like the 100th Raw episode in early February, and that was the end of that feud that had started over the summer of 94. They could have maybe stretched that to here and kind of had Luger get his win there, but it's fine. It's fine, however they wanted to do things.
Yeah. All right. Well, here we next up. We have, hey, you booked this, not me. All right. Number two. Next up. Hey, we got a great upgrade here. We have a super upgrade here. We have our first title match of the evening, and it is for the Intercontinental Championship. Your champion, Double J, J E double F, J A double R, E double T. Jeff Jarrett, who of course won the Intercontinental title in what I thought was a big upset at the Royal Rumble over Razor Ramon. The bad guy gets his rematch here. And this match is tremendous. These two had great chemistry. We said that the match at the Rumble was very good, and it just seemed to have got their chemistry seemed to have gotten better and better.
Yeah, that's you think this is better than the Rumble match? I think I like the Rumble one a little better.
Well, I gave this a 3.5, and I'll have to look back and see what I graded the.
I don't think you gave it higher than this.
Yeah, I don't think I gave the Rumble match higher than this. I think I might like this one. Maybe the crowd was a little hotter. You know, Razor was coming because Razor is one of those guys that might have been better off chasing than having.
Oh, I definitely agree with that. So I just thought maybe because this match is a little bit shorter and it ends with the DQ, they didn't get as much time to tell the story. But I do like Razor's blue tights.
Yes.
And of course, Double J has the roadie with him, and that's how he retains his title. Razor wins by DQ because the roadie interferes. And then they're beating him down, and then the 1-2-3 kid comes out in his little pajamas to save Ramon. And he actually does one of the early crotch chops at this show.
Yes, he did. Actually, it was very funny seeing. It was weird when they did an insert interview like on the screen, and it was with Razor and Kid looked so much smaller with his little with his jammies on. It looked like Razor's son. It's like so weird looking.
Also, we must mention that this show had the Jim Ross and Todd Pettengill in the aisle doing interviews.
Yes.
Before and after the match, and they had those big goofy kind of headsets on, which I never really fully understood.
Yeah, that was very strange. Incidentally, another first. This is on Graham's notes, our wonderful broham, Graham Cawthon, on his site, thehistoryofwwe.com. This was the night that they debuted, this according to him, this night they debuted the signature at the beginning that says for over 50
yes.
years
yep.
of the world, or whatever the heck it says. What does it say again? For over 50 years, the revolutionary force in sports entertainment, that big like marble-looking Pete there.
Yeah.
According to Graham, that's the night that it debuted. That's the night it premiered.
I think it was around this time, too, that the referees switched over to the stripes.
I'm pretty sure
it was early 95 they switched over.
Yeah, they finally got out of the little blue shirts and bow ties. And what's funny is they switched.
Yeah, WCW switched to it.
Yeah, because the NWA all through the 80s into the early 90s used the striped shirts. I can always remember, not Gary Young, Tommy Young, and of course Dave Hebner, or Earl, I guess Earl was in NWA. Earl had the striped shirts, and then I think they switched, and by 96, I think the refs in WCW had the...
It's actually earlier, because I'm actually watching, as we're recording this, I'm watching Super Brawl. I mean, I got the Luger syndrome. Super Brawl Saturday! I'm watching Battle Bowl from 93, and Nick Patrick has the shirt and bow tie on. So it looks like they were both wearing that for a little while, but I'm pretty sure it was early 95 when the WWF switched over to the striped polo shirts.
You think Battle Bowl was booked by Billy What's-His-Name?
I don't think he can pay him. also at the show, a little fun fact, is that Jerry Lawler accidentally unplugged some microphone cords, so he and Vince had to re-record the English commentary later on for the release. So it was kind of interesting. I don't know when it happened throughout the show. But
that's funny. I didn't know that. That was very interesting. So I think this match is a little better. Again, I think Razor's one of those guys, and I think we'll talk a lot about this with Steve Austin later on in the vault in a few years. He's just better chasing than having. And I think the crowd got behind Razor to get his title back after getting hosed at the Rumble. And obviously Jarrett escapes. And I'll say this, though. I will say this about the house shows at this time. A lot of people think the house show business by 95 was starting to really, you know, circle the bull. But this is, I think, the one – tell me if you agree with me or not. This is the one instance – 1995, where I think the house shows really benefited because, again, we talked – you mentioned in the beginning that this roster was very thin and a little flimsy in the work rate department. I think this is the perfect example. This feud between Razor and Jarrett is the perfect example of how the house show circuit really made these matches on big TV even better. Right. I think these guys' chemistry just got better and better because if you go onto Graham's site, historyofwwe.com, and go to the house shows in 95, these guys wrestled literally every night for 6 months. Right? Almost?
Yeah, and a lot of those house show matches also would get a lot of time because the roster was so thin, there weren't as many matches. So
right.
They get time to really work. And you got guys like Brett and Owen Hart and Backlund and Razor and Jarrett. You know, there were some guys that could really go on the roster at that point. So
right. Yeah.
That definitely helped things as well.
So I think the house shows, I think you really think about it, the house shows in 95 really helped this roster as best as they could. You know, because you were dealing with a lot of, you know, you had some thin talent. You had some guys that were kind of, you know, a little iffy in the work rate department. So this feud, for me, is the perfect example of how house shows were used perfectly to get guys over and to get
I mean, look, no,
to you, help guys out.
And you can't, I mean, you can't say anything else, but 95 was a very bland year. I mean, that's the best way to explain it. I'm not going to say it's awful. Was it their nadir? Yes, it definitely was. Where before they would, you know, turn things around in 96. But I would say mainly 95 is just very bland, very by the numbers. And it wasn't until later in the year when they were forced into finally waking up and making some changes right. that things turned around.
Yeah, exactly. But this show does have some bright spots. Now, as we get to the next four or five vaults, there aren't going to be that many, but there's definitely some bright spots on this night in Hartford. And this is one of them. The ending's a it was a little shaky. I wasn't crazy about it, but the match overall I really liked.
Yeah, I mean, they wanted to keep the feud going, obviously, and Rhodey doing this and Jarrett. I think they were trying to go the honky-tonk route a little bit with Jarrett and have him be the one that kind of escapes with the title here and there and dodges Razor, and obviously, like we said, they wanted Razor to keep chasing, so
right.
I'm kind of okay with it here because they wanted the feud to continue anyway.
Yes. Okay, so Razor Ramon wins the match by disqualification. But Double J, Jeff Jarrett, retains his Intercontinental Championship. All right, next up, we have, as I have him on my screen right now, way back in his world-class days, I'm not talking about our beloved Undertaker, but his opponent in this match.
Mm-hmm.
The Undertaker, only a mere, 4-0 at WrestleMania at
yes.
this point, right? 91, 92, 93, 3-0. Mere 3-0 at WrestleMania, so no streaks, no streak talking here. Taking on the
he had the same record as Earthquake, I think. At this point, it was also 3-0.
Yes, yeah. Taking on the muscle of the corporation, and I use that term very loosely. King Kong Bundy, who right now is wrestling some guy.
Will you stop?
Who's wrestling some guy that looks like Rene Goulet back in 1983 in World Class, but. Obviously, Bundy, part of the whole corporation storyline. We go mm-hmm. back to the Rumble when IRS stole the urn. And this match is just – by the way, this is Bundy's first WrestleMania appearance since WrestleMania 3, and it's also his last match.
Yeah, he does stick around through the end of the year, actually. He's on TV off and on, just kind of backing up DiBiase. But he doesn't really do anything of consequence. It doesn't make pay-per-view again. His final record's 2-4. That's all time, including his original run.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty much it. They would also, for some reason, added Major League Baseball umpire Larry Young, who would be the referee for this match. I don't know if they were just trying to get someone. I forget if there was a story behind why they picked him, but I'm guessing he was out of work. Because they had the season started yet? Because I know they started late in 95, right?
They'd start. Yeah, they don't start till May.
Okay.
Yeah, they took. Yeah, the first month was. Because the lockout where the strike was over in like mid February, so they obviously had to, instead of rushing, which a lot of people feel the NBA is doing now, they did a normal length spring training and just started a month late. So
they played 162 games, though, right?
No, they played like 100.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I think they only played like 150. I don't think they played a full. Because they didn't start the postseason late. I'll have to look that up.
I'm going to do it right now while you're talking. Okay. While you're rambling on.
Okay. So, I'm trying to do. I'm doing my best here with what I'm working with. I mean,
let's see. Well, the Yankees were 79-65. So,
what's 79-65 is 144 games.
Okay, so it was short season.
Yeah, it was a short season. Yeah, because the postseason started at the same time. I mean, the Braves.
Well, I can tell you right now, the first game. I'm sure people are thrilled with this conversation right now.
In any event, all right, you look it up. Anyway,
Wednesday, April 26th was the first game.
Well, what could be more riveting? Talking about the 1995 baseball season or this match or this
the Yankees feud? Defeated the Texas Rangers 8-6 behind Jimmy Key. Defeated Kenny Rogers at 3-10 in front of attendance of 50,425.
So the Yankees still got good crowd. Well, don't forget they had the best team in the American League in 1994. Well, now, anyway, what feud are we talking about? Oh, whatever.
Well, the funny thing though, actually, just to talk about this quickly, is they had a one game homestand and then they went to Kansas City after that game.
It's pretty funny.
So, and yes, it was 145 games.
I wonder if they just picked up where whatever the season had left off, because you figure it's 17 games that they lost.
Yeah, they must have. You're right. That's probably why they had that one game. They probably just said, we're starting on this date. Wherever the schedule was, that's where we're starting.
So I'm sure that a lot of teams had to deal with that. Anyway, what were we talking about again? Oh, the urn. Yeah, whatever. This match is absolutely atrocious. It's brutal. They're just deflecting this urn storyline from one hump in the corporation to another.
Right. Now, they still had it here, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And then Taker grabs it from DiBiase, hands it back to Paul Bearer. So he's got it for a few minutes. And then the newest member of Ted DiBiase's stable, who we'll talk to more about when he makes his actual debut, but Kamba, the Supreme Fighting Machine, comes down, steals the urn from Paul Bearer. And then he gets interviewed in the aisle, said he's going to melt it down into a chain. So the stealing of the urn storyline and the money... I almost said Money Inc. The Million Dollar Corporation Undertaker storyline rages on as 95 continues.
Yeah. Ugh. Now, if I remember correctly, didn't Paul Bearer have the urn in his hands during the end of the match, because they were waving the urn, they were waving it when the lights went out after he beat Bundy. Did Kama take it in the dark?
No, he had already. No, he took it during the match. It was during the match. I don't think he's waving it. I think that it's in the ring.
Maybe it's just the lights. All right, maybe it's just the lights in the arena. Okay, because I thought I remember him waving it around. Maybe he does that after the fact. All right. So the Undertaker wins. His record's 4-0. The match is brutal, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah, nothing stand out, but what does stand out... Actually, hang on. I thought I had it ready. Sorry.
That's quite all right.
Battling a little allergy-fueled head cold tonight.
Yeah, I can tell you. You got the very deep, nasally, almost... I'm trying to think of a good grizzled wrestler voice. Not sure.
All right, you think about that while we play this great piece of business that happened after that match.
Okay.
See, Vince, I'm standing here live at Pamela Anderson's dressing room trying to find out where she is. The word is her and Shawn Michaels had a big disagreement. She was very upset, very distressed, very distraught, so she had to leave the building. Nowhere to be found. I'm trying to find her. Anybody can help me? Hey, Steve McMichaels, how are you, buddy?
How you doing, baby? How you doing?
Have you heard anything about Pamela Anderson?
Oh, I'm sure you, big boy, you'd be able to find her on your own. But let me tell you one thing. I'm looking for this comic character. Where is he at? He calling me a cream puff? You're going to get yours again tonight, baby doll.
Oh, yeah.
How about some of your friends here?
Let me tell you something. King Kong Bundy, you've been telling people you're looking for me. I'm right here, baby. Standing right here. We right here. If you want us, come and get us.
You hear that? Come and get him.
Nikolai Volkov. You gotta leave the locker room if you want me, baby. You can't stay in there scared like a little chump. Come and get me. We're right here.
Anybody see the cigar store Indian around? Tatanka toy or Tatanka, something like that. I heard he's looking for me. I ain't hard to find. We're not all hard to find. We're right here, ready to roll.
Good luck tonight, guys. All right.
All pro team, ladies and gentlemen.
What else can I find? Let me see.
What the hell is going on in here?
He's lost.
Hey, that's Bob Backlund. Hey, Jonathan Taylor. How you doing?
Wait a minute.
How could you guys play chess at a time like this? Have you heard? Have you heard that Pamela Anderson is missing? Bob?
What's the meaning of this intrusion?
That's what's wrong with America today. You people with cameras, you think you can shoot on anyone at any time.
Bob, I'm sorry. I was just trying to find out about Pamela Anderson. She's been missing. Sorry to bother. Pamela Anderson.
Who's Pamela Anderson?
Oh, my goodness.
Mr. Backland, check and made. Thank you.
That's what's wrong with society today. All these young people taking advantage of their elders and showing no respect. Who's the 34th president of the United States?
Eisenhower.
What's the capital of Honduras?
Tegucigalpa?
That's smart.
Who's the chief justice of the United States Supreme Court?
William Rehnquist.
Huh?
That's what's wrong with the world! They think they know it all!
Pretty upset, Bob Backlund. Very distressed. Anyways, congratulations there, buddy. Nice job.
Okay, Nick, thanks for...
All right, baby doll. You want to go looking for Pamela Anderson? I know you'll find him, baby. All right.
That was the only real highlight of that tire.
No, the chest thing is tremendous.
The chest thing's funny, but Nicholas, it sounds like he called him Paul. Paul Backlund!
I'll give Turturro this. You wouldn't expect much of him, but he had a lot of enthusiasm, I remember, for this whole show, for the promos they did before it and for everything else, I thought. He was pretty into it. He at least tried. You know, I like when the celebrities at least try. They know the guys' names and they that's why I like the football guys, too. I thought they all got into it. My favorite is, was that Carl Banks? Was that the one that called out Nikolai?
Yeah.
I don't know if he realized Nikolai's like a 70-year-old man. Nikolai Volkov, you hide it from me. I'm right here.
And he's broke. Oh, God, that's funny. But,
And like we said, this is the celebrity mania. That was their main goal here, to overcompensate for the roster being so thin. They really loaded up on celebrities. And it's funny that the one year they really did this, since like some of the earlier ones, they're in Hartford, of all places. So,
yeah, I know. Yeah.
You know, it's funny. Like, you have all these celebrities, you think they'd be in L.A. or New York or even Miami, you know, somewhere, Chicago. Yeah. Somewhere major, but no, they're in Hartford, Connecticut.
They're in the insurance capital of the world. I think at that point, just hearing him talk, Vince was done. This was one of the few times where Vince really dropped the ball, because I think right there was at the point where I think Vince should have been like, you know, that McMichael guy, I kind of like the way he goes.
Oh, God.
I know, Vince. We're here on Superstars.
Well, it's funny because you see him here and you just kind of, you know, he's with the other football guys. He's kind of a throwaway thinking, oh, well, he's just... whatever, he's just here for this. And then all of a sudden, you know, a few months later, he's commentating on Nitro. It's like, wow, this guy's actually into the business. So, yeah. But speaking of guys talking, that just makes me so sad how criminally underused Bob Backlund was at this point. It's like you just hear him there, and his promo skills are so good in the heat, and he was just building such a good character at this point. And really, from here on out, he doesn't really do too much. They use him just on Raw here and there, and he pops up a pay-per-view now and then, but... this is pretty much his swan song as far as like a major guy goes. So it's kind of sad. I mean, he had just really gotten this character going, and they don't really use him, especially during a year where they had a lot of tepid heels. Like, they couldn't have gotten a 2-month run with Backlund in there somewhere. I don't know. It's just disappointing.
As we see when we get to our next couple of vaults, Backlund probably would have been a better choice for the title matches than what they ended up using.
Yeah,
but,
I think, you know, he definitely would have been better in a lot of spots.
Yeah. That was who was the Chief Justice of the United States? Oh, God. See, Jonathan Taylor Thomas kabooved his chess match for him. Very, very sad. But that is – no, it is a good promo. I think it's very funny. But it's just funny how, you know, all these football players and Carl Banks, Nikolai Volkov, maybe they would have had a match or something. But, yeah, I agree. I mean, look, Nicholas Turturro was not one of the best celebrities they ever had. But I agree with you that, you know –
he was kind of big at the time, though.
Yeah, he was. Well, NYPD Blue was – I think that was its first or second season. So it was one of the hottest shows on TV. I think David Caruso had already left, which obviously elevated the show to even better levels. But, you know, I agree with you. He definitely tried. He was busting. You know, he's just having fun, trying to make the most out of the situation. But I like the whole, him and Hearn Shawn Michaels had a thing. What?
Well, that was a storyline for later.
Yeah. But I thought that was pretty funny.
I thought all the celebrities on the show, honestly, outside of Pamela Anderson, who didn't really seem to give a shit, I thought the rest of them... you know, at least tried. They were at least into the show. And, you know, for 1995 WWF, that's saying something. These guys were at least all putting the effort in to be involved in some way, but outside of Pamela Anderson.
Yeah, and the celebrities would need to do the work because the two of the first three matches were unbelievable stinkers. So, you know, the celebrities were definitely needed to kind of sizzle something up on this show. But again, we kind of go back and forth because our next match is actually very, very good. And I like it a lot. And it is our second title match.
Yes. And the first, never mind. I was going to say first pay-per-view title match for this guy, but obviously he had had one before.
Right. We are talking about the World Wrestling Federation Tag Team Champions, who, by the way, were the Smoking Guns.
Yes, that's right. Because the night after the Royal Rumble, when the 1-2-3 Kid and Bob Holly won the tag team tournament, the returning Smoking Guns, Billy's rodeo injury had healed. And they were back looking to reclaim their gold, and they did just that. They defeated Kid and Bob Holly on the night after the Rumble, and they – actually, was that the first time? Yeah, that was their first tag team title. So.
That was first tag titles, yep.
Yeah. They are now World Tag Team Champions heading into the show, and Owen Hart, his partner Jim Neidhart in that tournament after they lost, and Neidhart left the promotion once again. He's up there with Jannetty for guys who reappear and leave on a win.
Bounce in, bounce out, yeah, pretty much.
Owen claimed he was going to find a mystery partner and finally win gold. And that he would do what Brett had done. He was going to win the tag titles, the IC title, and the world title. So there were a lot of rumors around this point, and actually they were very close to using Chris Benoit in this match. Benoit had had a couple tryout matches in 95, and Owen obviously was pushing for him to come in. But for whatever reason, they weren't interested in him. And I think Benoit's deal with New Japan at that time also kind of hindered things a little bit. So we'll see him in another promotion later in the year. But at this point, there were rumors that it was going to be him. If you read some of the old Dirt Rags and the Herb Kuhn's tidbits and Meltzer stuff, Benoit was looking like a pretty legitimate possibility heading into this show.
Could you imagine that team?
That would have been awesome. I don't know how much they really would have gotten to work in 95, although who knows? Because like I said, guys were getting a lot of match time, so they might have been able to run a little bit. It wouldn't have been like a huge mystery surprise, though. It might have been someone better introduced through vignettes or something like that. Because if they just had Benoit walk out here, people would have been like, who the hell is this guy? Because he had only wrestled like one or two pay-per-view matches in WCW at this point in early 93. And then, of course, he had his ECW stuff. But I don't know how many fans at WrestleMania at this point would have been privy to that. So,
right. Yeah, no, exactly. But just work rate-wise. And, I mean, it's funny because, you know, at the time, a lot of us didn't really know completely who Chris Benoit was. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was on pay-per-view in WCW. He wrestled
Scorpio.
I mean,
we'll get into
this. Yeah, he wrestled Scorpio at Super Brawl, whatever.
Saturday?
Yeah. Billy, what's his name, paid him. But he couldn't pay Luger. I think it was Super Brawl, whatever 93 was.
Yeah,
5
was 93.
Or something like that. Yeah, it's on his DVD. We'll get more into Benoit down the line. So it's not Chris Benoit. Would have been cool, but it wasn't. Mm. Instead, we get, I don't know, I was hoping maybe you had it. I could say it, but I was hoping maybe
you could say it. I got a different
Oh, yeah, different thing? Okay. Yeah. So, coming out as Owen Hart's tag team partner is the returning, he'd been gone since November, former World Wrestling Federation champion, Yokozuna.
And now the good part about this is Owen kind of continues his little smarmy, nasty heelness. He goes and gets one of his brothers, his hated brother's most heated enemies over the last couple of years, the man who had defeated him for the world title at WrestleMania 9, Yokozuna. So that was really cool. That was a nice little another touch that Owen's like, fuck you, Brett. Not only going to win the tag titles, I'm also going to do it with one of your hated enemies.
Yep. I agree. And I like this match a lot. I actually graded a whole point higher than you did. I don't know. I love the chemistry here. I just love the immediately once they were in the ring together. I love the Owen Yoko dynamic.
Yeah, because Owen was such a you know, one of those guys that could really work in the ring, but was also kind of a sniving, conniving little guy. So to have him kind of hide behind Yoko at times was really cool. Yeah, and they definitely did have a lot of good chemistry. And Yoko was just kind of the quiet muscle. For Owen. Plus they got Cornette and Fuji on the outside, so that was kind of neat. A lot of chaos in this team. And the Guns were really good workers at this time. 95 is probably their 95 and 96 are their best years as a team.
Right.
And you know, them selling and bumping around for Yoko was really good too.
I agree. And I think that it gave Owen some more flexibility in on the card, because obviously once his feud with Brett ended, although it never really ends per se, but his direct feud with Brett ended, he almost felt kind of floated around. And this was nice for him. It was good for him to get like a legitimate guy to be his partner. And then after years and months of working hard and, you know, going through the motions and getting the big matches, finally.
Mark, hammering away on Yokozuna. That was a certain pin. Mark, up and over.
He dumped it.
And the tag is made. Owen Hart comes in. Owen Hart, the legal man.
Sharpshooter. Sharpshooter.
Now he comes. One, two.
Oh.
Great moment. Owen's celebration, just like in Survivor Series, another thing of beauty. He couldn't help but feel good for him, even though he was a snivelly little heel and a hated heel. But just seeing him celebrate like that and how happy he was to finally win his gold was a great moment.
Yes. And actually, I almost hear a little bit of a crowd pop there.
It definitely was. I agree. I mean, it's not like the Guns, you know, they were faces and name, but they weren't like super over anything. I definitely think there was a pop there for Owen winning the title.
Yeah. Oh, very good. So, his first taste of gold, the Great Rocket Owen Hart, the King of Hearts, is finally a champion, as he and Yokozuna are the new World Wrestling Federation tag team champions. And they would hold him for, well, we'll see how long they hold him, but be surprised. So another great match. So for me, we're at 50%. We had a stinker, a good match, a stinker, and then another good match, in my opinion. We move on to the next match, which I knew immediately was gonna be good. It wasn't as good as I thought it would be, but it was good.
Well, sadly, the story is pretty good heading in, because Brett was looking for revenge on Backlund. This was kind of going to cap off their feud. Not being for the title obviously hurt it. And, you know, they make it the I Quit match once again, just like that submission match in Survivor Series. It was a good bookend arc. But the problem is, they don't really let them go that long, and they don't really let them do that much. The show only has 7 matches, but it's so overloaded with the celebrity stuff and everything else and all the other time killers that these guys only get 9.5 minutes. So the match itself isn't, the drama's not there, and because they don't let them go all out in the ring, it ends up being a little bit bland. So, I mean, technically it's okay, but it doesn't hold a candle to Survivor Series.
No, not at all. And, of course, the match we're talking about, just to clarify, the Hitman Bret Hart, in a rematch from Survivor Series 1994, when he lost the World Wrestling Federation Championship to Mr. Bob Backlund, they have a rematch here, and it is, as my PIC said, an I Quit match. It's an I Quit match. It's not like the match at...
not a submission match with Towels. Yeah.
Yep. And for the second straight...
Who are you to doubt El Dandy?
I seriously don't. Bob Backlund might. But no one else does. But for the second consecutive year, Bret Hart almost has his own personal referee at WrestleMania.
Yes, that's right.
And making his return after... the longest intro of a song ever.
I know we've been through some good and troubled times.
Ugh. You always stop at like the worst time because you don't know what the hell he's talking about. A lot of people think they should have said goodbye here. We do say goodbye to his opponent and his referee. But anyway, returning for the second consecutive year to referee the match is the Hot Rod.
Yes.
Rowdy Roddy Piper. Of course, Piper refereed the final match at WrestleMania 10 when Bret defeated Yokozuna. And then he hung around for a while, obviously, and then would have that really weird match with Lawler at King of the Ring. Here, though, he gets the referees the match, and I quit. And Hart, in return, interesting little twist here, ratchets the crossface chicken wing on Backlund.
Now, but talking about the match itself before we get to the finish.
Yeah.
I found Piper to be pretty annoying in this match. He didn't really add much to it, and he had the mic in his hand because instead of just giving up, they actually had to say, I quit, into the mic. And Ozzy just kept sticking the mic in their faces. Dude, what do you say? What do you say? And this is getting really annoying. And like every time
he was doing it after every match, like a kick, a punch, yeah. Like every single thing that went on that happened, he did it.
Yeah, and you could just tell like Brett and Backlund both kind of get annoyed with it. It's like they couldn't even work a hold or sell the move at all because they had the mic jammed in their face, so they couldn't really do much. Yeah. Anytime they did anything, he was right there. And plus, it wasn't a wireless mic; he had like the cord, so it was just really. I don't know. The whole execution of this match is just un-Brett-like. And, you know, we'll see throughout 95 that he's obviously severely deep-pushed into the mid-card, and this is where it kind of starts.
Yeah.
So he gets his win over Backlund. Like you said, he puts a crossface on. And the story itself is so much better than the match because I just like the whole book. It's basically the bookend of the Backlund story from when he snapped on Brett in mid-94 with the crossface, and then it ends here with Brett putting his own hold on him, the hold that Backlund vowed that no one else could ever get out of. So... the story part of it's cool, but the whole execution in this match just leaves a lot to be desired. So, yeah, just under 10 minutes. And then Backlund doesn't even say he quits. He just yells, into the mic when Piper asks if he gives up. So
it's such a mess.
Yeah, and then after Backlund is interviewed in the aisle and he says that he saw the light. And, of course, it'd be a few weeks later he announced that he's running for president. And then that would pretty much be his gimmick for the rest of 95. He would just do these little vignettes saying how he's going to run for president and whatnot. So
his gimmick next 17 years.
I know. And outside of a couple of rumbles that he'll be in over the future years, including those matches, his final record is 1-7. This is his last actual like single or tag match.
Yep. And his it's funny. His lone pay-per-view victory, he would win the world championship.
Yes.
Not many guys could say that.
No.
So what we thought would be a match that would kind of help us out on this show ends up being an unmitigated disaster.
Yeah, it kind of sucks too, you know.
Yeah, it does suck because you look at it on paper and you're like, wow, this match is going to be great. They had a great match.
But if I stay, she'll only see right through me. And then that look of shame inside my eyes. So I'd rather turn away. Because things you're going to say will break her heart.
Who in the name of Christ wrote those lyrics? That is awful.
Someone who is scorned greatly.
Yeah.
Someone who's obviously hurting deep down inside.
Yeah, and exactly. It certainly wasn't Brett. I'm sure he was hurting after this match, hurting his pride because he had to wrestle such a mess. I feel almost uncomfortable having to grade a Brett match that low. I mean, I was actually a little generous. I gave it a 2.5, and that might be a little generous. But two wonderful in-ring tacticians and the whole gimmick just... And I don't know what Piper was thinking. He punched him in the face. Do you quit? All right, kicks him in the gut. Do you quit? I mean, Piper, what are you doing? Fortunately, unlike 94, he wrestles this match. He referees this match, and then we don't see him again for, you know, like 11 months or something. So he's pretty much gone. All right. Before we get to the match that saves the show from being a complete pile of shit, why don't we take a breather and digest what you've heard so far, which has been a little bit of good and a lot of bad. And let us hear a message from our wonderful friends at WrestleChat.net. And that is because...
Obviously, Stone Cold, you can see we're going to get to everything that you did here. We just need a little time to get to things. Yeah. We weren't counting on you being here right away.
So. Yeah.
Well, the kid there you just saw on the TV was a sacrificial lamb. He showed up with a jock strap on his face, got dumped on his neck, and they carried him out after that. And that's exactly what's going to happen to anybody else I get in the ring with.
Well, let's talk about the hitman Bret Hart, because you've made no secret how you feel about the legendary Bret Hart.
Well, right, because he's going to sit there and say, I'm the best there is, I'm the best there was, I'm the best there ever will be, I'm the excellence of execution. Man, I ain't got to invent a bunch of dumb slogans to try to convince myself I'm great.
How many pro wrestling news websites do you visit to get your daily news? 3, 4, maybe 5? Do yourself a favor and make that number 1. WrestleChat.net, the only professional wrestling news site that brings you all wrestling news all day long, and is home of the critically acclaimed Still Real to Us podcast, starring former CZW ROH and ECW announcer Eric Arjulo and the champ,
Jeff Peck.
That's WrestleChat.net. WrestleChat, it's where it's at.
I need a bunch of damn slogans to tell everyone that I'm great.
He's out there with a jockstrap on his head like those fucking midgets. They don't put it on their balls. I put it on their head while they're playing basketball.
WrestleChat.net.
Stupid sons of bitches.
WrestleChat.
The fuck are they doing, Chris Golo?
Midgets.
You coaching this fucking team?
Midgets and jockstraps.
Is Rotella on that team?
yeah, he is. He could use a jockstrap too. Well, maybe he wore one of the Special Olympics.
Yes, and that's... your cunt is in the sink.
Maybe that's why the archery bow hit the deer in the head
and knocked all his hair off.
Yeah. WrestleChat.net is your home for everything pro wrestling. WWE. I was going to say ECW, TNA, some UFC stuff, and of course the champ and his wonderful announcer with their podcast, and of course they have a great message board. And if you're listening to you're listening to our podcast, of course they sponsor our weekly news and notes segment on our headline show. And if you're on the front page, just look to the right of the page, you'll see the PTB gnome, click on it and you'll go right to the Podbean page and our wonderful and exemplary podcasts. So WrestleChat.net. Midgets and jockstraps, all playing basketball, and Matt Rotella's archery accident. All.
Hey, PTB Nation. It is now time for the Rob Houston Memorial Hacksaw Jim Duggan Update.
Jim Duggan in WCW in 95. We'll pick it up in March 22nd at Saturday Night Taping. He defeated the immortal Sonny Trout with a running clothesline.
That's the fucking guy's name, Sonny Trout.
Yeah, and guess who he defeated on March 23rd in Savannah, Georgia?
Sonny
Stone
Trout.
Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Oh, Jesus.
Well, stunning Steve Austin, I guess. He beat him, yeah. Ready for this? Mm-hmm. March 23rd, March 24th, March 25th, March 30th, March 31st, April 1st. He defeated Steve Austin all those days. And then he defeated Sonny Trout on Saturday Night Taping once again on April 5th. And let's see, April 15th episode of Saturday Night, it was announced that him and Steve Austin would face off on the main event. And guess what? He beat him on April 5th again. Beat Big Bubba on April 11th. And oh my God, on the opening round of the U.S. title tournament on April 23rd, Steve Austin gets revenge and defeats Jim Duggan to eliminate him from the tournament.
Wow. Jesus, God. Talk about a guy that hit in the head with an arrow. Wow. Poor Sonny Trout. What the fuck that guy's real name is? If it's Trout, I feel bad for
maybe
him.
Maybe he's the brother of Mike Trout from the Angels.
Yes, that's right. Or the other, Steve Trout, who pitched for the Yankees and threw a ball behind the backstop. And it was an actual pitch. Oh, good Lord. What a mess. Poor Steve. God. Unbelievable. So he beat... It's amazing. In those, first 6 months that he was in WCW, he beat two future world champions.
Yep.
Like 50 times.
Yeah. Austin was his bitch for like late 94 and early 95.
Yeah. I'm sure he just wanted to kill himself at this point. And DDP just, he rebounded finally after 4 years, but that just wasn't fun either. You know what? You know what's really sad? I can't believe I'm about to say this. If Duggan was still with the company, he probably could have done something on this show. So it makes it even worse.
Yes.
Could have stuck him in. He could have put him with the Allied Powers, Luger and Duggan. That
I
great.
Can't believe you're advocating that he'd be back. All you did was want to get rid of him. Now you want him to be around still?
Well, no. All I'm saying is he probably could have. Okay, you know what? I'd rather have the midgets and the jockstraps. How's that sound? Well, they could sing the national anthem with what's her name.
I don't know. I don't know what's wrong with you. You're as bipolar as you are, stupid.
What? Look, we're dealing with a match that we're. I don't know what's wrong with you. You're wearing like your Tony Romo jersey today. You've been very grumpy this week. My God. If he wins a Super Bowl, you know what? You can have the trophy then, and I don't have to hear you cry anymore. All right, let's get back to our wonderful.
Speak the truth.
Oh, jeez. Truth will set us all free, and maybe we'll set Tony Romo free too. But we'll talk about him next Wednesday. All right, back to the show, and finally the match that defines this pay per view.
Mm-hmm.
We've had a 50-50 undercard, and now the last two matches are the ones that they will be that will be remembered, and the two matches, in my opinion. That saved this show from being a complete and utter disaster.
Yeah, I agree.
We'll start with this one. We have our world, for the first time in WrestleMania history, the World Wrestling Federation Championship match is not last.
Seldom right and wrong again, my friend. WrestleMania 8, it was in the middle of the show.
Oh, yeah, well, nobody remembers that match either. But, so for the second time in history...
If you want to count WrestleMania 9 and 10, there were title matches in the middle.
No, but not the long. Yeah, but those had multiple title matches, right, so that doesn't count. That doesn't count.
It only counts if it fits your story.
If it fits, oh my God. Why don't you have Tony Romo host this show next week then? Because, you know, in my eyes, if he's cut from the Cowboys, then he'll need to have something to do. So,
yes.
All right. Okay. Big Daddy Cool. Diesel. Your World Wrestling Federation champion. Taking on the winner of the Royal Rumble in January down in Tampa, the Heartbreak Kid Shawn Michaels, former employer.
And this match makes complete sense storyline-wise. Obviously, they were pretty much penciled in against each other from when they broke up. Diesel would get the title on himself so he could defend against Shawn. Now, I remember heading into this, it wasn't really established yet that Diesel was any kind of dominant champion. I think I remember being pretty sure that Shawn was going to win the title here, to be honest with you. And then when it wasn't last, I felt even more sure about it. Helping with that was Shawn claiming he needed a new bodyguard to help protect him from all the superstars now gunning for him. Mm-hmm. And, of course, on 220, he brought that man out, and it was the big, the bad, the vicious Sid. Sid's first appearance since WrestleMania 8 in the WWF. He spent all of 1993 in WCW, where he was set for a major push and to win the world title, but he ended up getting fired because, of course, he had the stabbing incident where he stabbed Arn Anderson with some scissors. He would head over to the USWA in 94, even winning their heavyweight title. He played some softball. And then in early 95, when Shawn was looking for a bodyguard, he brought Sid back to the promotion. I remember being pretty excited to see Sid return here. It was a pretty good return on Raw, even though it was spoiled by me by the Immortal Journal line, line there. So I knew he was coming back, but I definitely recorded that Raw because it was a pretty cool one.
Yes.
So Sid's back in. Shawn needed a bodyguard with Diesel. Turned on him, and now we're set here. Shawn with his new muscle against his former muscle.
That's right. And I think going in, you were thinking that this was probably going to be a relatively decent match. I mean, Brett gave Diesel a good match at the Rumble, so you thought that Shawn would give him equally as good a match. Now, we heard about the whole rift between Shawn and Pamela Anderson. So Shawn comes out with somebody else. And he comes out with Playboy Centerfold. I believe she was in Playboy at that point. Yeah. Playboy Centerfold, Jenny McCarthy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what else she was doing at that time, but
I think she was doing, was she doing the MTV show yet?
Was she on the MTV show yet, or was that later? No, she might have been on at that point.
Yeah, I think it was definitely at that point.
Whatever that stupid show was, yeah.
It's driving me nuts. I got to look it up.
Yeah, she was on, she came out with Shawn Michaels. And she was actually smiling. She was getting into it. She thought it was, she probably had no idea what the fuck was going on, but she was into it. You could tell. And then Big Daddy Cool comes out alone, and then he walks about halfway up the ramp. The intros for this match felt like half an hour. And Diesel slowly goes up the ramp. And turns around and
Singled Out was the show. It was a dating show.
Yes.
Yeah, that started in 95, so.
Yeah. I knew it was a dating show. I just didn't remember what the name was. And then out comes Pamela Anderson. And they sit next to each other outside the ring. Jenny McCarthy at least is smiling, looking excited, looking, wow, this is kind of cool. And Meanwhile,
she's probably like, apparently Anna says, I gotta sit through this fucking shit again. But she looked a little bit more into it here than she did at the Rumble, I'll say that. At the Rumble, she looked like completely bored out of her mind.
Right.
Here, at least she's trying a little bit. She's rooting on Diesel. And of course, all the other celebrities come out here. Nicholas Turturro is the ring announcer, and Jonathan Taylor Thomas was the ring, the timekeeper. And then, of course, the two chicks at ringside. So all the celebrities come out here. Mm-hmm. I liked Turturro's little New York accent introductions. Of course, like most guest announcers, like Alex Trebek and some of the other ones, Bob Uecker, they were awful at the inflection of, you know, announcements, how to go, you know, go up and down with the,
yeah,
what words to elongate when you're speaking and whatnot. So it's pretty funny.
Yes. But
Big Daddy, Cool Diesel.
Yeah. He's like his cadence was ridiculously off. But and then there was all those photographers. It was like, what, like 15 Japanese photographers around the ring? And
yeah, you could tell they were really trying to make this. Their whole goal with the show was to make it feel big because it wasn't big enough on its own. So you have all the celebrities, you have all the hoopla, you have all the media. They did a lot of media and press leading up to this show, and we'll get to a reason why in a minute. But and then, yeah, during the match, you have all the photographers. Or actually, during the whole show, they were out there. They had all the photographers around ringside. It wasn't just Japanese. It was everyone. Were around ringside to really put over that, yeah, this was a major event. This is really, it seemed like the first time they were, in a while, they were trying to push WrestleMania as like an iconic major worldwide event at this time.
Right. Yep.
Which, and again, brings back to the question and begs it, why Hartford? Like, it seems like an odd choice for them. I know they probably wanted a small arena because business was down, but they could have picked a better market to be in to push this kind of agenda that they had going on. Maybe they figured they were close enough to New York that it counted. I don't know. Like, why not Long Island? If you wanted to be close to New York and still kind of have this, you know, ambiance and celebrity, or even go back to Jersey, I don't know, Meadowlands or something. It seems odd that they chose Hartford for having a show where they were really trying to push the, you know, publicity factor.
Cap Center, Washington, you know, Landover, anything like that. Yeah, very weird. So, as we anticipated, that Diesel and Brett had a great match at the Rumble, this match might have been even better.
Yeah, I really like this match. I find it very entertaining, very exciting. Now, there is a major criticism with this match, and Bret Hart is really the one that pushes this whole agenda on this match. He talks about it in his book, and he talked about it, and I think he even talks about it on the Face-to-Face DVD, which I do own, with him and Sean.
You didn't want to show it to me, so you must have hid it from me, so that's
yes.
Fine.
So he talks about this in that interview as well, how he felt that these two guys were kind of set up to fail, because he said he knew during this match that Diesel was going to end up being the heel and Sean would be the face, just because Sean was a guy out there busting his ass, bumping all around, taking all these shots, and basically looked like the underdog as Diesel's beating on him. And it just the two roles they had, the way they had the match worked, he just knew that they were going to be in trouble. And Sean's actually also admitted that. He said when they he didn't want it to be like this. He hit the big elbow and Diesel kicks out and he like kind of presses him off him or something like that.
Yeah.
And he said they knew, that's when he knew that they were fucked when they made that spot. I can't remember the exact spot. It's something to do with one of the pinfalls in the match that he knew the crowd was going to turn on Diesel and get in behind him. Because really, when you watch the match, he really is booked more like the underdog, especially when you have Sid out there as well, not really helping things. So it was just kind of a weird dichotomy. It's almost for the second straight show, they really submarined Diesel's run as a top face. First, sticking in there with the most over guy in the roster, and second, with the guy that the fans were kind of dying to cheer at this point. Sean was so good in the ring and so good on promos and such a good character that the fans were really starting to turn him anyway at this point. So it was kind of a tough spot. I know Sean earned this match, but it was a tough spot to put him in.
Yeah, and on, regardless of all that kind of stuff, though, I feel like the flow of the match was good anyway.
Oh, yeah, the match itself is very good. Yeah,
yeah, and Sean, I think it was more Sean really put forth, you know, one, maybe the first real great, well, second great match of his career. And I think everyone who probably thought that maybe, you know, after he took that long, you know, took most of 94 out of the ring and, you know, wrestled a little bit and but really didn't put on a super outstanding match, that maybe they thought his latter match at WrestleMania 10 was a fluke and maybe he was a one-trick pony. Nah, this match here shows that Shawn was going to have a very long and lucrative career in professional wrestling. And Diesel, again, let the smaller guy dictate the tempo. And yeah, from a philosophical viewpoint, you're wondering how this 6 foot, you know, 9 or 6 foot 10, 320 pound guy could be the underdog against a 5 foot 11, 245 pound guy, regardless of Sid in the ring.
Yeah, I mean, that's why they obviously added Sid to the mix. And Sean, obviously, they were hoping that he had just been such a douche to Diesel all those times that that would carry them through this match as far as the heat goes. But people just wanted to cheer Sean at this point. And it was kind of like how Diesel was in late 94. The fans were just behind him and kind of turned him. And they did the same thing to Sean because he's so great in the ring and after that great Rumble performance. And, you know, say what you want about Sid. He's a monster heel, but he was always a kind of a cult favorite. So he probably wasn't the best guy to if you're trying to make somebody even more of a heel to stick in there.
Hey, Vince, how you doing, buddy? I was just at Pamela Anderson's dressing room, but she was nowhere to be found. Yep. So I'm hanging out here in the green room. I was just with Salt and Pepper. Who else can I find? Hey, Jennifer McCarthy. How are you, sweetheart? How you doing?
I'm having
how do you feel being around all these big hunks, huh? Yeah, look at that. Sean, I got a question to ask you.
Restless.
Where's Pamela Anderson?
Oh, don't worry, Tricky. Nikki, I know where she is.
Where is she?
She'll be Johnny on the spot. But this is the day she's been waiting for. The chance of a lifetime. The chance to walk the heartbreak kid to the ring. What's better than that? I'll tell you what's better than that. Nick,
you tell
walking out with the heartbreak kid as the new World Wrestling Federation champion. Right, Nick?
What do you think Diesel's doing right now, Nick? When he's sitting there, he's got a burning feeling in his stomach. And he's working his way up his throat. And he's wanting to pee. And what's causing that? Fear! Fear! Because all your dreams have now become the nightmares!
Well, Vince, you can see they're pretty intense in here.
Yeah, I'll say.
They got news for you. You're a little high-strung. That's the way
it is. You know, I'm playing detective, but it's not like that, Vince.
I always love that promo because they're in the green room. The Million Dollar Corporation's there. Kama's hitting on Jenny McCarthy. And then everyone's just kind of lighthearted and giggling and laughing. And Sid just is like fucking insane. Screaming at Diesel, and when they pan back around, Kama's in the background just laughing his ass off. This is really funny. This is like since this is like a fucking nut job, like can't even ever relax and just have a good time. He's like flipping out.
Oh my god. I love. Hey Vince, how you doing, buddy? Yeah, like he's at a pizza stand
around here. I don't know.
So Diesel indeed retains his World Wrestling Federation Championship, beats Shawn Michaels with the jackknife.
Well, now you're missing one of the biggest parts of the match is when Sid is outside the ring and he's interfering, he's getting involved, and Earl Hebner hops down to push him away and kind of stop him from getting involved, and he twists his ankle. Back in the ring, Sean hits Diesel with the super kick and he has him pinned. Now, around this time, too, Sean really started using the super kick as his finisher. Obviously, yep. It started with the few times he knocked Diesel out in late 94, but so he has him pinned, but the referee's outside, you know, with the messed up ankle, and Sid can't get him back in the ring in time. So then Sean ends up not winning the title of that spot, and then Sid would toss the referee back in the ring, and Diesel would eventually hit the jackknife. And it was one of those crazy jackknives where Sean actually, like, spun and did, like, a 360 and almost landed on his feet. It was kind of weird.
It was kind of cool. But, yes, Sid did pretty much. And that's what leads to the awesome promo the next night on Raw, which we'll get into on our next vault.
Yeah, now he, one of the funny spots, I remember laughing at the time, Sid, when the referee's down, pulls out a knife from his pocket. We all thought he was going to stab Earl Hebner, but instead he just cuts the turnbuckle pad off. It was just really funny that this guy just really seemed pretty, they were making a pretty good job of making him psychotic during these couple months, always screaming all the time and going crazy, and then pulling knives out and cutting turnbuckles apart, so... And then after the match, all the celebrities get in the ring with Diesel, and they're all celebrating, and Jonathan Taylor Thomas, Totoro, and the two girls get in, and they all raise their hands, and Diesel, I think this was their way to try and make Diesel mainstream, you know, almost like they really were trying to make him their Hogan at this point, so they were trying to get that mainstream credibility, and I think they figured if they have him in the ring with these celebrities, it was a picture they could post all over the place and send out. Of course, there weren't as many, gossip magazine type shows at this point. There's only a couple probably, so
right.
If this was nowadays with all the TMZ and everything else, E and all that stuff, they probably would have had it plastered a little bit more, but you could see what their intent was with this show quite a bit. And I actually have a pretty good take, I think, on the whole concept of this. We'll talk about after the show, but here is the post-match interview, another piece of excellent work with Sean and Sid.
Unbelievable, come on, it's believable. Everybody saw what happened. This story of my life, huh? Come on, you gotta be kidding me.
I had him. I had him be the new World Wrestling Federation champion. He was out. I gave him some chin music, and he was out colder than a block of ice, and the whole world saw it. You may not like it, but you know the truth when it's right in front of your face, and the heartbreak can't prove it to you tonight. I am the best. Oh, sure it is. Little chin music. Right there. It is over. Am I right?
See, I'm going to tell you sometime, Pettigill. Just like when it comes to the World Series or the NCAA playoffs, there's always more than one umpire. There's always more than one referee. But tonight, on the world title at stake, one referee, and he's a bubbly fool. He falls and blows his knees out, and my man has to pay the severe price. And, brother, I'm going to tell you something, Diesel. You know you was that far from losing your title. Well, this man is not finished with you.
You know something? I'm so sick of talking. I proved it to you right there. I shouldn't have to do it again. But you know something, Big Daddy Cool? If you're even half the man you say you are, you'll face me again, Jack. Come on! You know it, and I know it, and now the whole world knows it. I told you I'm the best, and tonight I proved it. And if I have to, I'll prove it again.
So, again, great promo work, and it was clearly setting up a rematch for the next pay-per-view. That's the way you could tell it was trending.
Yes, and Sean did a great job there, and Sid still sounds like a ridiculously crazy lunatic who has no idea what the hell he's talking about.
Well, I think that was set to be his role at this point. And I like how they kind of teased a little bit. They showed the replay, but you don't really see why Earl Hebner was out, and Sean was kind of a little bit confused as he's talking. And as we'll see, of course, that would really be ramped up the next night on Raw. So,
yes. Yes, exactly. So, because of Sid's mistakes, as it were, Diesel retains his World Wrestling Federation Championship, and Shawn Michaels is once again this close.
Yes.
But we do have one more match.
Mm-hmm.
And this continues your theory about Diesel being put in the mainstream, because it's really big here.
Yes.
Let us turn back the clock to Tampa at the Royal Rumble. Bam Bam Bigelow and Tatanka lost the finals of the World Tag Team Title Tournament to the upstarts, the 1-2-3 Kid and Sparky Plug, Bob Holly. Bigelow's walking around the ring, frustrated, pissed off, and he's being heckled by a fan right outside the barrier. Wondering who that fan is. Well, that fan turns out to be former New York Giants linebacker and future NFL Hall of Famer.
And current cokehead
and crazed lunatic and child molester, Lawrence Taylor. Bigelow's pissed, shoves LT to the ground. Why don't you take it from there?
Okay, so following that, Bigelow was forced by the WWF to apologize, and of course he did not like that. He was not very happy about that, but he did it. He went ahead and apologized to LT, and it seemed like everything was behind them. They were going to move along. A week or so later, though, Bigelow retracted his apology and started to speak out on his own.
Thank you very much for joining us. Before we hear your apology, let's take you back to the Royal Rumble and talk about the match itself, if we may, for a moment. I mean, there you were, losing to the 1-2-3 Kid. That had to be the most embarrassing moment in your whole career, was it not?
You know, you really know how to stick a guy in the ribs.
No, but I mean, it had to be embarrassing.
It was the kid's greatest day of his life. Every dog has its day. I will give him to that. He beat Bam Bam.
All right, fine. From there, actions in the match required you to go to the hospital later on. You took 14 stitches in your upper lip. You were obviously disoriented after the match was over. Your manager was not there. Your tag team partner was not there. You were left alone. You were left alone, embarrassed in the ring. You got out of the ring. The fans started making fun of you, didn't they?
Well, you know, when you get left alone and all your homies and everybody leaves you behind,
Mr. Bigelow, they were making fun of you, weren't they?
The people were making fun. The people were having a blast.
Exactly.
Everybody in the audience, as far as I can see, they were just having a good old time in my
experience. And you know what? They pay their money, and they're entitled to laugh. They're entitled to jeer. They can do anything they want, and you should not take exception to it, which leads me to Lawrence Taylor. Why did you take exception to Lawrence Taylor when Lawrence was simply doing no more, no less than any other fan around ringside?
Well, you know, it was my opinion that he was just having a little bit more of a better time than everybody else.
No, it's because he's a professional athlete, isn't it? And you felt that he disrespected you. That's what you said before the broadcast.
Yes,
is
that's
it not?
Right. Yes, that's right.
In what way do you feel Lawrence Taylor disrespected you?
You know, any athlete that's the caliber of Lawrence Taylor and that's the caliber of Bam Bam, you put them on the same level. At least I would as a man. I would show pride. I would show admiration to my fellow man, my fellow athlete. But no, Lawrence Taylor had to put me at a level that was below his.
How did he do that?
Well, you know, he smiled, he's laughing, having a good old time, puts his hand up. Anybody that goes to shake another man's hand, you shake his hand. You don't laugh in his face.
So as a result of that, then, that would be the justification to shove Lawrence Taylor on a concrete floor? Is that the justification?
You know, I came out here last week to make an apology. All out of sincerity of my heart, I was going to make that apology. And it didn't feel right then. And it don't feel right now, McMahon. I'm not making no apologies for what I did to Lawrence Taylor. If I shoved him, I should have shoved him harder.
Wait a minute. You were suspended for 30 days.
Yeah, I was suspended
for
30 days.
And I got to remind you that just about everybody in the WWF fraternity agreed with.
Listen, let me tell you something. I don't care about the 30-day suspension. And I don't care what happens from now and then. You listen to me and you listen good, and you LT, if you're out there, I want you to open up your ears too, because I got something to say to you. Now, you want to put dignity and pride on the line? Well, I'm willing to put mine on. Why don't you put yours on? No pads, no helmets, no teammates, Lawrence Taylor, just me and you, man on man. That's my apology.
You're challenging Lawrence Taylor?
I'm challenging Lawrence Taylor anytime, any place.
No handy dandies, no disqualifications, no countouts.
Yeah. What the fuck was Vince's problem?
Yeah, he was being a real dick to Bigelow.
Fuck you, Vince. Bigelow had to punch him in the fucking face.
That was a great promo by Bigelow, man. That was maybe his best ever. He was really fired up. Yeah. You know, he's that guy that didn't always get a lot of time to talk, but he was an old school guy. He came up in the old school. He knew what he was doing. And I always liked the build to this feud. I thought they did a good job. I thought they made Bigelow seem legitimate. And I thought LT really worked hard to play his role as well. And, of course, the story behind it was that that's what I pick up where he left off. So, anyway, yeah, he bitched about LT being there, said he laughed at him on his own turf. Bigelow would keep insulting him week after week. And as that was going on, LT's managers and lawyers kept showing up on TV and telling Bigelow to stop defaming LT and stop challenging him because nothing was going to happen. And also what was going to happen was they're going to sue Bigelow. Eventually, after a month of goading, they had LT on in a face-to-face interview and he accepted the match for WrestleMania. Diesel would train him. That was a story heading in. And the week before, they had a, actually it might have been a couple weeks before, they had the WrestleMania press conference live in Times Square. They had a public workout with Bigelow and LT, and they had a little face-off, and the Million Dollar Corporation assaulted Lawrence Taylor, and they kind of added some extra heat to this match. So actually, I really like that little segment, and they showed it on Classics on Demand a couple months ago, the whole public workout. It was like 15 minutes. It was pretty cool. It was like outside in the middle of Times Square, so it's kind of neat, like all these cars drive by, and these guys are all going at it. So
yeah.
You know, the build for this match was very good. They're in Giants territory for the most part, so there were a lot of LT fans, I think, there.
Yep.
And, you know, this gets crapped on quite a bit for being the main event. So maybe I could see maybe why it should have been in the middle of the show. You figure, you know, world title match always be last at WrestleMania. But in a time like this where they were really grasping for straws for any kind of publicity, any kind of credibility, I can see why they did it. And I'm fine with it in the end because both guys worked so hard. It's not like it was a joke of a celebrity match. I mean, LT really busted his ass. And he's probably like the, you know, Ric Flair of celebrity workers. He was, you know, this match, I think we both gave like a 2.5 or 3. Two and a half. So, I mean, but it's like a 5-star on the celebrity scale. It was really, really well worked. And LT really sold well. And his offense looked pretty good. Probably because it was legitimately stiff, I'm guessing. So.
Yeah. I agree with everything you said because when I first, when we first did this show and I first wrote this review, 2004, probably early 2005, I absolutely destroyed this match. I was, again, the old school philosophy, the last match should either be the world title match or a match between two guys like Hogan and Sid at WrestleMania 8 that had a great build,
right?
And a lot of build behind it with two wrestlers. And the fact that you've got Bigelow, who I love and I always have, and a non-wrestler in a pitiful gimmick match just really got my goat. And that's why the first time that we did this review and did this show, again, this was had to have been almost 6 years ago, over 6 years ago, I totally shit all over this match. And that's why I didn't fail this show, but I almost gave it like a D-, because it really pissed me off. Then when we watched these, when we went through them again and I watched it again, I really watched it very closely. And I realized, you know, it's not like, you know, some skinny, you know, no talent, no athletic ability hack.
Right.
You know, you're dealing with a guy who was in incredible shape, you know, who had only been retired, who had only been out of football for a couple of years. He retired, I think, in 93. So he was still in really good shape. He got the whole PR mainstream thing.
Mm-hmm.
And in the end, it really isn't that bad a match.
No, I mean you got to look at it on two levels. One is the booking and where they were placed on the card. That's not their fault. So to me, you can't really hold that part of it against them.
Right.
Would this card maybe have been better off if this match is in the middle and then maybe you have Bob Backlund and Brett go a little bit longer and then you close out with Diesel Shawn? Probably. But like I said, I can see based on the time period and where they were at why they did it this way. And if the match would have been anything worse, I probably would have been more angry about it. But like we both said, LT was in great shape. He really put the effort in and really put the work in. It only goes a little over 11 minutes. Pat Patterson's the guest referee, because obviously they wanted him. I think he was in on training LT as well, so I think they figured if he was the referee, he could help walk them through the match a little bit better. Of course, the celebrities and pageantry continues here. Your girls Salt and Peppa, they sing a tribute song to LT, mm-hmm. as he's introduced, and Vince would do the two teams member by member. First, he introduced the Million Dollar Team. They played Ted DiBiase's music, and of course, it was Tatanka, Nikolai Volkoff, Kama, King Kong Bundy, IRS, and DiBiase himself, and they all ran out doing a little boxing, punching moves, which is kind of funny. Yeah. And then they had the LT All-Star Team with the Monday Night Football theme, and that was Mongo, Ken Norton Jr., Chris Spielman, Ricky Jackson, Carl Banks, and Reggie White. So pretty good star power on the football side.
Yes. Mongo had retired already.
But all pretty big names.
Yeah, he had retired. I'm just trying to think where each guy was at the time. Ken Norton was, I think, with the Niners at this point. Yeah, because he's the first guy to ever win three consecutive Super Bowl rings, because he won first two with the Cowboys.
Really? I didn't know the Cowboys had won a Super Bowl.
Oh, good Lord. Who's feeding you your never mind.
Say stupid things. You got to expect to get them thrown back.
Oh, my God. This was 2 days ago.
Yeah, all right. It was not like it was 6 months ago. Well, we may still be talking about it 6 months from now, we'll say.
All right.
I'm going to make sure my daughter's first words are, Scott, the Cowboys have won Super Bowl. Stop crying.
All right. So and then he went to the 49ers and won in 1994. So let's see, who else was
Spielman, I think, was on the Lions at this point.
Yeah, he was still on the Lions. His neck hadn't totally melted yet.
Ricky Jackson.
Ricky Jackson, I think, had retired. He was with the Saints for most of his career. Carl Banks had retired. He was with the Giants, obviously. And then Reggie White was still playing with the Packers, because
mm-hmm.
the following year he would win his I'm sorry.
Is he on the Eagles still at this point?
He was still in the Eagles, because the first year that he's with the Packers is the year they won the Super Bowl, okay. And that was 96.
So he was heading there. Well, he was done with the Eagles. He was a free agent at this point.
Yeah, so.
And he obviously would also move to WCW in 96 as well and get involved in some wrestling. So him and Mongo went to WCW after this show.
Right. And I really think now that I listen to that promo, I'm just amazed that he shouldn't have, that he should have stayed.
And he was pretty good. Him and Kama actually had a really good fight on Raw before the show. It was like a week or two before the show. They got to a brawl, and the brawl was actually really good. I really thought they were going to look to sign Mongo, and then that's why I was so surprised when he showed up in WCW, because, he was pretty good in his little stint here. And I don't know, I've always been a Mongo mark, as bad as he was in the ring. I thought he had a unique charisma, and he always connected with the fans in WCW, I thought. He always seemed to be pretty over. So, well, at least for the first couple of years before he really fell apart, like in 98. But before that, I thought he was pretty good. So, yeah. Anyway, there's your setup. Of course, we get the big face-to-face, big old LT in the ring to get the photography down. And so you get your promo photo there. And And then they start the match itself, and LT gets some offense in, and Bigelow beats him down, and LT was gassed, obviously, just a couple of minutes in, but he hangs in, and I thought he did a great job selling. I thought Bigelow, you know, worked hard to use some safe moves, but also moves that looked legitimate, and smack LT around a little bit. LT, of course, battled back. The problem is, I don't mind that Bigelow ended up losing this match, but LT kicked out of the moonsault and the headbutt. That was a little bit much, because now you're killing this guy's finishers. I don't mind. Yeah. I think maybe they should have had to miss one of those moves, and then LT win. So I thought that was a little bit much. They probably didn't need to bury his finishers like that. But they really pushed that LT had been trained and prepped by Diesel, so that part of it at least was a little bit believable, because he was the, you know, considered the best of the promotion at that point. So, and of course, an LT goes to the middle rope, hits a forearm. I always liked that forearm. I thought he hit him pretty good, pretty stiff in the mouth.
Yeah, he smacked him hard. Yeah, he did.
And he pins Bigelow to win the match, so... and then he celebrates with his football team. So that's the match itself. You know, solid stuff, like you said. Just
yeah,
it is what it is, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I think the, you know, if they got excited for the end of the show and the crowd was happy, then that's all you can expect from this show anyway. So.
Mr. Crispolo, why are you making sighing noises? I
don't
know,
because I'm just,
I
don't, you know, you know what? I don't know what's going on the last couple days, but all of my PIC.
Let me ask you this.
Pissing me off tonight, but go
Crispolo,
ahead.
Why was I not one of the celebrities at this show? And there seems to be many celebrities, and I had just been coming off my guest starring appearance in the Thunder in Paradise movie.
I don't know. I thought you were going to be. I thought you were the one that was challenged by Bob Backlund to play chess.
I only play checkers. I'm not a fan of chess. He did play against Jonathan Taylor Thomas. Now, was he the one in the with the whale, the whale jumping over the rocks? Was that him in that movie?
Was that Free? Oh, you mean Free? You mean Free Willy? I don't know.
That movie makes me cry. That movie when they save the whale and Willy lives. Maybe it was not. Was he in the other movie with the Alan Timpson?
Alan Timpson. Yes, it was Alan Timpson. Yes.
Oh, okay.
It was Alan Timpson. He and the other kids, and Pamela Anderson was on that show too. So
she was Pamela Anderson's my girlfriend on the boat.
That's right. And you know what's the deal with that? I mean, I thought you had taken care of her and Jenny McCarthy, and you guys were heading down to with your boy down at Downtown Bruno's. Wasn't that his name of his agency down there?
Downtown Bruno, yes. He runs the similar to Maritel's Bathhouse, but it's for women, not for men.
Oh, okay.
I do have a secret for you, though. This is the reason I appeared at this point in the show. I've been waiting patiently under the Christmas tree, sucking on throat lozenges and preparing for this this part of the show, because I do have a secret for you to impart upon you. Do you want to hear the secret?
You know what, El Gigante, you are a gentleman and a scholar, so I would love to hear. I'd love to hear your secret.
And flattery will get you nowhere, Mr. Crispolo. But anyway, the Salt and Pepper hit song "What a Man." You know that song?
I do know that song. Yes.
And that song was actually written about Derek LaRue. What happened was they did not know he was a man when they first met him, and when they found out, they were like, "What, a man?" They couldn't believe it. They could not believe this androgynous person was a man. So. You know, along the lines of the Chaz Bonos, this is what Derek LaRouche is to other people. What a man. So that is where that song originated.
Very interesting. I didn't know that. Now, El Gigante, you are a big philanthropist.
Yes, a very big philanthropist, yes.
Yes. And
I give lots of money, and I examine the vaginas.
And you were here in Connecticut for the
Special Olympics.
Special Olympics World Games. And,
yes.
Except, of course, I wanted to check my notes. It's not been a good week for me here, but I had to check my notes. I was wrong. It was not a deer. It was actually your pet llama
what?
That Matt Rotella killed with a bow and arrow in archery.
Now, I knew my llama was killed at this event, but I did not know it was the Shell Rotella's.
It was Rotella's. Yeah, it was his bow and arrow.
Was he jealous of my llama's hair?
I think he was trying to take it down to shorn it and then, you know...
Well, you know that I won the competition for running in a naked furry man suit. That was my special Olympic event.
Yes, and congratulations on that gold medal, I must say. Amazing time.
All right, Mr. Crispolo. I'm going back to my Christmas tree. The nativity set misses me, and I need to go rest my voice and drink some lemon juice. Goodbye.
Okay, good night. Wow.
Hey, at least he's bringing the information now. Usually he just comes in and... talk shit about people.
Yeah, must be a big fucking tree if he's lying under it. Jesus Christ, what is he lying? What is he, Rockefeller Center? Good Lord.
It's, well, you know, it's got to hang out somewhere.
He is. So, all right. We waited. Jim Duggan and El Gigante waited till the main event because obviously more celebrities need to be put here at the end. So, all right. So there's.
I'm back for a moment. There's someone else I meant to call out, and that's Austin Pfaff, posting my my appearance on Baywatch on your Facebook's page, and that footage is only meant for me, my friend. I know you're trying to pay tribute to me. I appreciate it, but that's for me and Pamela Anderson's. That was our time together. My periwinkle blue shirts and me and the Hasselhoffs with the hairy chest. So, Austin Pfaff, go fuck yourself. I'm gonna use UPS from now on. Goodbye. Wow, he stormed back up here, man. He was
pissed. He kicked over everything. He kicked over the fucking tree and Jesus.
I think he stepped
Christ.
On your
thanks,
present.
Thanks,
he stepped on your
Christmas
present.
We're gonna have to get. We're gonna have to call UPS for the next tree. Thanks.
I'm sorry. Your Christmas present was destroyed. He stomped on it as he
came
did. Over.
Yeah, I figure.
Good thing it was an empty box. So
yeah, it goes with the rest of my week. All right, so there's WrestleMania 11. Again, when we first wrote this show, I absolutely hated it, but I still don't like it, but it's not as bad as I originally thought it was, and B, I at least now can understand.
It's just depleted, just a depleted roster.
Why they had to do what they did, exactly.
Now, the only guy, there was a couple guys missing. A 1-2-3 kid could have probably been on the show. Tatanka's not on the show, and he was coming off a pretty good run. I mean, he is in the main event at ringside. So I still think maybe they could have done something with him and Luger, or maybe they could have done Luger and Bulldog against a Tonk on IRS just to get him on the show. Kid, I'm not sure what he could have done. I guess he could have been at ringside with Razor instead of just interfering at the end. But those are really the only guys I could kind of think of off the top of my head that had been pretty big at this point that weren't on the show. So the point I kind of want to try to make here regarding the celebrity involvement, I think Vince had the right idea. It's to try and draw these eyeballs into the biggest... hang on one sec.
Well, anyway. Oh, that's what was happening. Okay, I thought Giante came back in.
Oh, shit, sorry. I thought I hit mute. I didn't mean for you all here.
Yeah, but that's okay. It was either that or we thought Giante threw the tree out the window and tried to hit you in the head with the stump. So
yeah, these allergies are killing me. So anyway, so his idea was to bring that mainstream to the biggest show of the year, get as much publicity as he could, and hope that those fans would stick around afterwards, be lured in to see this show, and LT would kind of bring those extra May football fans or wrestling fans that had fallen out, would come and enjoy the product and stick with it. The problem was the show wasn't that great at this point. This WrestleMania was eh, and then Raw was okay the next couple weeks, but it wasn't really enough to get those fans and those people to stay. Now, in 1998... he would use the same exact template going into WrestleMania, but the difference is the product was fucking awesome at that point, and you were able to capitalize, and you had more captivating characters, and the fans all stayed. So I think he had the right idea here. I think it was just a couple years too soon, because he didn't really have the product. So I get what he was trying to do. He was trying to divert the attention from his weak roster and also hoping they'd bring in some eyeballs that would stick around. But the show itself, I think, monetarily... and buy rate wise, I think was a decent success. So I think they did okay.
Yeah.
There was actually rumors at this point that LT was going to stick around, because after the match, you could see Bigelow was kind of arguing with DiBiase, and it was pretty clear that he was going to turn on him at this point, or they were going to turn on him. And there were a lot of rumors that LT was actually going to come back in for another match, and he was going to team with Bigelow to feud with the Million Dollar Corporation a little bit on another pay-per-view. I don't know what happened, if that was legitimate or not, but nothing ever obviously came of it, and LT never appears again. So
that'd have been a lot of fun. I would have enjoyed that. Sure,
I agree.
Why not? Okay, now we do one of our favorite parts of our vintage vaults, and that is hearing from you, wonderful PTB Nation. So why don't we go right to our Facebook page, Place to Be Podcast, and dive right into the comments, because as usual, you are wonderfully verbose, and let's dive right in. We'll begin with our art director. And a guy who has no, who keeps forgetting to put the asshole of the week.
No, he did it.
He did do it.
That's because you don't check the Facebook page. Doesn't mean people don't do things.
All right. Whatever. It's par for the course of my week. Who are you? What am I doing here? Anyway. Okay. Jason Greenhouse. Diesel and Sean had as good of a main event as they could. Bam Bam Bigelow was the MVP of this show for making LT look like $1 million. I will say, though, of all the celebrities that WWE has brought in as in-ring performers, from Mr. T to Floyd Mayweather to Snooki, LT's performance was probably the best.
Mm-hmm.
Now on to the rest of this vagina in the sink. The opening match served its purpose. Luger and Bulldog got the win and continued their push to tag team. Taker and Bundy would have been better 10 years prior when Bundy was still in his prime. Owen and Yoko winning the tag straps was great. I popped it home just like the live crowd did in Hartford for the new heel tag champs. Brett and Bob Backlund couldn't quite find that same magic that they had at the Survivor Series. Speaking of Backlund, the backstage segment with him and JTT was hilarious. I was in attendance at Raw the night after the show when Sid turned on Sean. I believe that was also the same night that Bertha Faye made her debut, attacking Alundra Blaze. This is a strange era for, time for WWE. The dark days, the post-steroid era, the new generation. Call it what you will, the spring of 1995 was not good.
Except for WCF March Madness. That was pretty good this time.
Yeah, but I heard that was tremendous. Yes, tremendous.
I love that segment, the next time I Raw with Sean and Sid. That was awesome that you were there live, Jason. Mm. J.R. Arsenio D'Amato. I won a $20 bet thanks to a giant-hating Bears fan who despised LT. I didn't have the heart to tell him rumors about that wrestling is predetermined. LT was so exhausted after the match, which garnered a lot of respect for WWF performers at the time who always had to fight the stigma that they weren't real athletes. LT could have followed up with a few more matches but chose to wallow in the muck of his own avarice by snorting eight balls of the off the asses of 15-year-old hookers with El Gigante.
Oh, boy.
El Gigante only messes around with hookers of age. He wanted me to let you know that.
Great. Can't wait. I'm looking forward to him coming back next week. Austin Fath.
Beef with El Gigante? He doesn't do anything to you.
Oh, my God. You know, I have a beef with everybody, apparently. I guess I'm just
an angry old man.
Yeah, I am. I guess I am. All right. Austin Pfaff. Being from Connecticut, I can't find it myself to really bash this WrestleMania, as many probably will. Was it the greatest? No, but it wasn't the worst either. First off, I remember trying to go to the Fan Fest the day of and was denied because it was sold out. However, still managed to pick up the program and a Razor Ramon Say Hello to the Bad Guy shirt, purple shirt, which might have had to have been better than that god-awful yellow shirt. Speaking of Razor, had another good match with Jarrett. Solid opening tag match. Taker Bundy was fine. Tag title match was a shock with Yokozuna returning. Shawn Diesel was good, thanks to Shawn, of course. And this might surprise many, but I really did not think LT Bam Bam was that bad at all.
Mm-hmm.
With all the hype, it did live up to it. Only match that was a little off was Brett Backlund, and I think Brett had said it's his worst match ever.
Wow.
All in all, this WrestleMania is solid in my book. It's just a shame Connecticut will probably never see another one unless they make the UConn football field a dome, which I would gladly pay more taxes for. I'm serious. Well, I wouldn't, so.
Well, you also hate UConn. Brett, his worst match ever, maybe he meant like worst WrestleMania match ever. Austin, maybe you can clarify for that for us. I doubt that was his worst match of all time.
Yeah.
Corey Ferreira, nothing can save this show. Well, let's get into it. First up is the new team of Lex Luger and the British Bulldog, a.k.a. the Allied Powers, taking on the Blue Brothers. Not a good opener, especially after Brett and Owen the year before. Razor versus Double J, not as good as the Rumble match. Taker versus Bundy is just awful. I agree with Jason. I reckon this would have been better if they had Bundy from 85. But we get this, and it's not fun. Owen Hart provides the only highlight of this miserable fuckfest with the returning Yokozuna to win the tag belts from Smoking Guns. Plus, it plants the seeds for Cornette, Owen, and Bulldog down the line. Sadly, next is the worst match of Bret Hart's career. I guess he agrees with that as well. The I Quit match of Mr. Backlund. Sure, it was nice seeing Piper back, but the match is hard, especially how awesome Survivor Series match is. This is not a good follow-up. Finally, what may be the best match on the show, Diesel against HBK. Sean carries Nash for a decent match, but not even Mr. WrestleMania can save this show. Ironically, the biggest show of the year was the nail in the coffin for Diesel as a decent champion until Survivor Series. Now, the last match. LT takes on Bam Bam, honestly. Bam Bam made LT look good. Shame Bam Bam couldn't go over, but wrestling and celebrity means celebrity beats the wrestler. It's always been that way, and we can all accept it now, even in 2011. Overall, very awful WrestleMania. It's as bad as two. Depends on if you prefer the start of the Hogan era or the mid-90s WWF.
Hmm. A couple of quick ones. Jeremy Nichols says, horrible show. Not even Brett and Sean could make this show watchable.
Nick Cardinal. I heard a rumor that the undercard on this show was bad on purpose to make LT Bigelow look much better in comparison. Any truth to this? I've never heard that. It's an interesting theory. I don't know if I buy it completely because I think they were just really just light on horses for this show. I don't think they had a lot of depth. They had really purged out a lot of guys, and some of the newer guys hadn't really been established enough yet to have WrestleMania matches. So I guess I could see it, but I don't think so. Honestly, I'm not sure. Because if so, I don't think they would have let Diesel and Sean go on right before. If they were really trying to make LT Bigelow stand out, I think they would have had a match in between those two.
Mm. Yeah, no, I can't see them purposely making a show lousy just to make that. I mean, I don't know.
Right, let me do. I'll read Dennis Nunez, and you can read Jared because I think my voice may totally die.
Yeah, your voice. Go ahead.
All right, Dennis Nunez. This WrestleMania ended up being less financially successful than WrestleMania 10, which should say something. The only decent match was Shawn versus Diesel for the WWF title, and LT versus Bam Bam, surprisingly decent if anything else. The IC title match was not as good as it was at the Rumble, which is a show I always remember being bad until recently. It just didn't feel like the biggest show of the year. Poor Pam Anderson and Jenny McCarthy, JTT and Salt and Pepper. Interesting fact, according to his autobiography, LT ended up using his entire WrestleMania paycheck on crack, and I completely buy that.
Yes, and he gave some to me this week. All right, Jared Incel, ready. Like WrestleMania 9, WrestleMania 11 is one of those
shows.
You're
just depressed. I feel like you'd be more pumped up and excited. Maybe give you some of his depressants.
Yeah, like WrestleMania, yeah, maybe some.
Slowed you down. Some somas slowed you down.
Yes, yeah, great. Like WrestleMania 9, WrestleMania 11 is one of those shows that I've only watched once or twice at the most. There is a reason for that. And it's not hard to point out. The show sucks, plain and simple. The celebrity spectacle overshadows the wrestling in this event, which may not be a bad thing since the actual wrestling leaves a lot to be desired. Still, the WWF is trying to push their product into the mainstream at a time when their product was at its worst. The timing for a show like this is just bad. WrestleMania 11 may not be as bad as WrestleMania 9, but that's only because Shawn and Diesel put on a pretty good title bout that earns Match of the Night honors. To be honest, though, they had very little to compete with on this card. The rest of the card is very underwhelming and forgettable. The opener was a paint-by-numbers tag match. The Razor vs. Jarrett IC title match could have been better. I can't remember Undertaker vs. Bundy, which is probably a good thing. The tag title match was mediocre, but it was nice to see Owen finally get some WWF gold. The Bret vs. Backlund match was okay, but it had a weird flow, and Bret himself has even said it was his worst WrestleMania match ever. That's probably what... who was that earlier? Was that D'Amato earlier that said that's probably what he meant?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, that's what I thought, too. Lastly, the Bam Bam and LT main event was better than anyone expected. Got to give props to LT for being able to work a decent match. It was clear he spent some time training for it. That being said, he was probably fueled by nose candy during the bout.
Good chance.
Yes.
Sean Watts, not one of the best WrestleManias ever. HBK versus Diesel is a good solid match and easily the best of the night. LT does better than everyone expected. Undertaker's dud WrestleMania matches continues here.
Okay. Why don't you do the next one? And can you get through the one after that, and then I'll do the long one?
Yeah. Neil Trauma. Right. Any problems anyone might have with the show were totally vindicated by the awesome sight of Owen jumping for joy with the tag titles in his hands. Oh, yeah, and Luger and Bulldog's badass mashup theme song. I don't think he meant vindicated. He probably meant, like, eradicated or something.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Dave Hall, quite possibly one of the worst WrestleManias ever. If not one of the worst pay-per-views ever. While HBK and Diesel put on a decent match, Michael steals the show by outshining Diesel, making him look weak, and forcing Vince to turn him face. Owen and Yoko form a unique team, put on a decent tag title match with the Guns. Other than that, crap, crap, crap. Bulldog and Lex look uninterested in teaming together. Undertaker is forced to carry Bundy to a pitifully, painfully poor match. Ramon and Jarrett cannot recapture the chemistry for the Rumble, and for some reason, Bret Hart and Bob Backlund cannot recapture their magic either. After a great Survivor Series match, this is a real letdown. Bigelow and LT was never going to set the world alight, but Bigelow did his job for Vince and effectively ruined his WWF career in the process as he was never taken seriously again until his ECW days. Very hard to watch this event again, and the writing is pretty much on the wall for the year we're in for.
Okay. Brian Samick, still proudly displaying his Nittany Lions profile picture. What I found strange about this Mania and Mania 13...
Diddly Lions.
is that... Did you really just say that? Jeez. Is that neither one really has that look of WrestleMania. They both just look like another regular pay-per-view and don't have that je ne quoi, if you will. As a WrestleMania, this one is near the bottom of the list, but as a single show, it's really not that bad. The IC title match is really good with a terrible ending. Why have a DQ ending in a title match at WrestleMania? I don't get it. They still do it today, and I don't know why. Anyway, good match, bad ending. Undertaker vs. Bundy is quick, so not that bad. Plus, it kicked off the summer feud between Kama and Taker and the swank urn chain that Kama creates. I know you guys hate this match, but like I said last show, I'm a fan of the Taker Corporation feud.
I think me and Samick are the only two that care about that feud.
Pretty much. The tag title match was a nice surprise as Yoko gets some more gold and the Guns get squashed. These two, Owen and Yoke, had a good team for the summer of 1995. Bret gets his win back against Backlund in under 10 minutes. They should have done this at the Royal Rumble, but that would change Bret's entire 1995 booking, which they should have done anyway. The WWF title match is really good, as any time two Click members battle against each other, they bring their best. The jackknife at the end is really the only bad part of this, as Shawn almost lands on his head. I guess it lands on his feet?
Yeah, it was definitely he almost lands on his feet, yeah.
Yeah, and it really makes the move look bad. LT looks good in this match. as versus Bigelow, but I don't like celebrity versus wrestler matches. I understand why they did it for mainstream attention, but I still don't like it.
Jordan McKinnon. I watched a show on tape a few weeks after the fact, as my interest really started to wane by this point. This was an awful Mania, as far as standards go, for Vince's premier show. Watched it the other day to see if my opinion had changed, and it has not. I think this is the last WWF pay-per-view I ever watched. Haven't followed the Federation or really wrestling in general since. Well, we're glad you followed the show anyway, Jordan. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. Peter Khalil. The only thing I can say about this Mania is it is sandwiched between two of the best Manias ever, 10 and 12, Diesel and Shawn, and Davey Boy gets his hand raised in an awful match. At the time, the only two wrestlers I cared for were Bulldog and HBK.
And Rob King, one of the worst WrestleManias of all time. Next. Some new faces. Thanks, guys, for joining up.
Yes.
Peter Khalil, Rob King, and there was one other one in there as well. Nick Cardinale. So, cool.
Nick Cardinale.
Thank
yep.
you. I hope you guys enjoy the show and keep the feedback coming. Now, let's hop over to the History of WWE Facebook page. We got six yes. or seven there. Let me read this first one because it's quick. Chet Zickowitz. The buildup of Diesel versus Shawn was overshadowed with disappointment with their match. In my opinion, worst WrestleMania main event ever.
Okay. Mike Wilkinson. I know, Justin, you defend this show, but it is one of the bottom three Manias ever alongside 2 and 9.
LT now, see, I won't deny that. Like, I don't say it's a great WrestleMania. I will admit that it's like bottom five. I mean, I don't try and say it's tremendous. I just think the hate it gets for the reasons it gets it aren't completely legit.
Okay. LT versus Bam Bam was a joke, and that was one of the worst main events ever. I really liked HBK Nash, and it would be Nash's last good defense until October against Bulldog. Really? The rest of the show is in the sink. Brett really got screwed at the show. After they killed the Backlund push, nobody gave a crap anymore, and this match was nothing close to their match in November. I remember still wanting to see more Brett versus Owen, as I felt the heat was more there. You did change my mind a little on Rumble 95, but not on this crap fest. Looking forward to Survivor Series, which is the next good show, but now comes the shit. That was 1995.
Steve Riddle. After a good show to start 95, the downward spiral begins here with WrestleMania 11. The opener is pretty dull, as Luger and Bulldog can only do so much. The IC title match is good, but not as good as their Rumble encounter. But the ending wasn't great. Taker defeats Bundy in another snooze fest to go to 4-0. The tag title match is pretty good. Zelina gets his first title win with mystery partner Yokozuna. The I Quit match is okay, as the highlight was Roddy Piper's surprise appearance. But the match was dull as all hell. It's all of Backlund. I don't know what may say that. It's all of Backlund's heat is gone, and Brett is horribly misused. Shawn Diesel is great, as Shawn delivers on his vow to give another show-stealing performance, while Diesel has his last great title match until November. LT Bigelow is a lot better than most give it credit for. No, it's not 5 stars, but it's not terrible either. Overall, the show's pretty low on the WrestleMania totem pole, but there have been worse.
Okay. Jay Hinchy. I don't dislike this WrestleMania as much others do, but it is still low on the Mania list of best to worst. I like Diesel HBK title match, and for the way Shawn was built going into the, I thought he was going to win. Good match, and the fallout from Raw the next night would set up Diesel's next challenger going into a new pay-per-view in May. LT Bigelow at the time was, when I was a kid, thought was cool, but now I'm a little mixed since LT got in trouble a year or so ago. Brett Backlund finished off their feud here with an I Quit match that was fine, and Piper's involvement was cool. Undertaker defends his not-yet-talked-about streak to 4-0 against Bundy. Saw a solid icy title match with Jarrett and Razor, and Yokozuna coming back to win the tag titles with Owen from the Smoking Guns is a good moment. The opener with the Luger Bulldog versus the Blue Brothers I don't remember much of, but Lex and Davey together was cool. Also, some interesting celebrities here with Pam Anderson once again, Jonathan Taylor Thomas, Home Improvement Rules, Salt and Peppa, Nick Turturro. Not a terrible Mania, and I am a defender of this one.
Tony Nagel, the worst WrestleMania of all time. Shawn Diesel is a fun match, and even LT Bam Bam isn't bad, as most people make it out to be. Problems twofold. It took place at the Hartford Civic Center with no big feel atmosphere, and the rest of the card stunk out loud one way or another. For as dreadful as 1995, this is a barometer of how bad it truly was.
And finally, Chris Scholds, the ultimate train wreck of all WrestleManias. This show has absolutely no redeeming qualities whatsoever. Best match of the night was Diesel successfully defending the WWF Championship over Shawn Michaels. Bam Bam Bigelow also had the job to former NFL linebacker Lawrence Taylor, which was an absolute joke, and that pretty much killed Bigelow's career, as he deserved a much better fate. The rest of the show was a waste of time. To top the train wreck off, Vince McMahon decided to have this clusterfuck at the Hartford Civic Center, which is not exactly a venue where a WrestleMania should be held. 1995 was a very dark period in WWF history, as the lack of talent on the roster was painfully evident, and things would not begin to improve until Survivor Series 1995 arrived. Avoid this show. Yeah, yeah.
So there you have it. There is your feedback, and there is your WrestleMania 11 Vintage Vault review. Hope you enjoyed it. We did our best to make it entertaining, I think, despite
the
lack of energy on that show. But yeah. We're going to be struggling throughout 95. We'll do our best to make these shows as entertaining for you as possible as we hit this dead spot in WWF history. So with that said, we're going to go ahead and wrap up. We hope you enjoyed our week, loaded week, three shows. And next week, we're going to be back. It'll be a little bit of a lighter week next week. We're going to be back at the headlines as usual Wednesday night. But we're going to take a week off from the vault just with the Christmas weekend. Scott and I are both pretty busy over that weekend, so we're probably not going to have time to bang out in your house. Maybe if things change, we'll let you know. But as of now, there should only be one show next week, and then we'll be back the week after with a couple more. And also, we will be setting things up for our 100th episode as well. So with that said, I'm going to go ahead and wrap things up, Scott. WrestleMania 11's in the books. We'll be moving on. And until then, we'll talk to you next week. For Justin Rosero, I am really fucked up. I am Justin Rosero. That is Scott Criscolo.
Oh, good. Finally, you get to do something wrong for once.
Have a good weekend. Come on, man. I'm all doped up on allergies.
Fuck you, Tony Romo.
Oh, come on. I am really a mess. Go ahead, vamp for a second. I screwed up the whole song.
Well, anyway, next week on the headline show, I'm going to defend my Cowboys' mediocrity. Because obviously I'm not allowed to to win any championships, but no. Next week we'll have the headline show. Much more. We'll talk more WWE. We got Raw coming up. SmackDown, obviously. We'll give you the recap of TLC, which is this Sunday. We'll have our asshole of the week, and of course, news and notes. I got some network news to talk about because actually some muckety mucks from WWE actually arrived. We're in our building today. And I heard some rumblings and mostly industry stuff, but I'll still talk about it because it's actually very interesting. It's actually a new wave of what's going on in television now with new networks involving shows and programming. So you'll find it very interesting.
Okay. Well, now we're done. Now we're good. I got things fixed. And thank you very much for covering for me there.
Sure.
Having a rough night here. Having a rough night. I need to go to bed.
Well, yeah. Well, that's all right.
All right, let's try this again. So we'll talk to you next week. I'm Justin Rosero. That's Scott Criscolo. And thank you, as always, PTB Nation, for hanging in there and being so loyal and tremendous. Take care.
Peace. Born and lied once to me, yeah. So I give stuff that I'll never forget. Yeah. He keeps me on cloud nine just like a tip. He's not a fake wannabe, trying to be a pimp. He dresses like a dapper dumb, but even in jeans. The original, the man of my dreams. Yes, my man says he loves me. Never says he loves me not. Mine, I rush me good and touch me in the right spot. See other guys that I've had, they try to play all that math. But every time they tried, I said, that's not it. But not this man, he's got the right potion. Baby, rub it down and make it smooth like lotion. Yeah, the ritual, highway to heaven. From 7 to 7, he's got me open like 7.